This is going to be another episode of Snake and Banter. Our guest for this one is another potential Hall of Famer in CS. It is JW, three-time major champion, also a major MVP. Many other things. Once accused, potentially cheater. No, not the other one from Fnatic. Actually, his was really early in the game, you know, just in the wrong circles, hanging around with the bad kids, the Zealoses of the world. There's a name no one thought would ever mention again in 2025. Whatever, there you go, Zealous. You got to mention about 10, 13 years later. Fair enough. So obviously, as he says on his Twitter, not just founder and player and captain of Eyeballs. He just puts everything. Founder, I don't know, dad, fucking one paying the bill. Just everything in Eyeballs, right?
Yeah, I mean, I've been stuck here in the Swedish scene for the last 3 years, trying to build it up again. I think a lot of things have happened, but there's still a long way to go, obviously. But yeah, I'm happy to be back in the same room as you guys again. It was quite some time ago.
I have a quick question for you, which goes like this. I mean, we actually did do Flashpoint 2, you remember, which was during the old era that we've all deleted from our minds. That did, in fact, happen. So one thing I do want to ask you is this, though. There was actually a recent, like, content piece on ESL Pro League JW where they had, like, pros, and one of the, like, sort of fun things they were doing is they had a whiteboard and they were asking them, like, what's your top five AWPers of all time? And they were all doing, like, either... This is basically... It reminds me of sports, mate. They were either all, like, new school kids, so they were just, like, Shimple and, like, She-Ro. Like, how's Shiro even on the list yet? Or they were just like boomers, and then they were just like, Pasha plus Guardian. It's like, fucking hell, this is all old school now, and there's almost no one added to it. But one thing I noticed is you were kind of missing off these lists, mate. Have people forgotten the JW AWP?
Yeah, it kind of feels like, but I think it's also like you say, like the memory screws you a bit sometimes. I think it's the same. When I read people talking like who is the GOAT, and
right.
So many are like Donk is the GOAT, of course, but like,
right.
you can't
sure.
put Donk as
sure.
a GOAT as of yet. I mean,
yeah.
I'm sure he will be eventually if he keeps this up.
No, I'm with you.
But obviously, you cannot. He's not even up for discussion
yes.
as of right now. I would say
yes.
I think it's just a memory that screws a bit. But I got a bit sad by not being mentioned like ever. I think it was Shiro I was watching, and he, to me, it sounded like he was trying to say JW, but they wrote some other name.
Oh, right.
I kind of heard my name there.
Right.
And I was hoping like he's mentioning me, but apparently he did not.
No, by the way, two things there. Like, one, it is true. Like, obviously, in the modern day, people do have some really wacky ideas. Like, put it this way, when people talk about like, the GOAT of CSGO, I actually get bored of the fact that people think the only names that even get in the conversation is like Simple and Zewu. It's like, first of all, mate, immediately go ahead and put like Get Right and Cold Zero in there. Like, that's not, even if you take them out later, they have to start in the conversation. Just like, just look at their careers. Like, that's how I know if someone didn't watch the beginning of the game, they had unbelievable careers. And then similarly, put it this way, one thing I'll tell you, and this is small comfort, but it is consolation, JW is. If the greatest team of all time is Astralis, as everyone says, because of all the resume and all the... So I'll tell you what, you live forever in their brain, Smith. I know they still remember those insane ones when you were in TSM, where you did all those, like... I think you have some of the most troll pro clips I've ever seen, mate. Like the one where you jump over that Molotov at Long A, and you go around the back on KGB, and it's like nobody in the world would ever go over that Molotov, so he thinks he's safe. And I think the same game you even do, the one where you run down short, and you just like jump out of like... middle and shoot them yeah. and then jump down. Like these are like clips that if someone did that to you in a Faceit game, you'd go, oh, this is bullshit. Like you were doing that on LAN in like pro games.
Yeah, I think you also said it pretty good. I think it was you who said it sometime that like if you watch just like my highlights, you would instantly assume that I'm the best player
yeah,
to ever touch CS.
Yeah, it's true.
Something like that. And yeah, I mean, it's nice yeah. to have like all these highlights, but
yeah.
as you said, like if you only watch them, I look like the best player
yeah,
to ever touch the game. But obviously the inconsistency
sure.
was there, and that's not how it looked every game, but I do have some cool highlights,
yeah.
I would say.
No, here's the thing, mate. I know, like, obviously, I think about that HLTV Hall of Fame. I know everyone's going to think of, like, Heaton and Partey and Get Right and Forest. Look, they were better players than you in their eras. But the difference is, I agree with you. If you just looked at the highlight package of you and Flusher, you'd be the fucking GOATs, of course. It's the most bonkers clips of all time.
Yeah.
I think for people that didn't watch the early days of CSGO, like I had to go back myself and do this, but I watched a lot of the S tier tournaments from 2012 and 13. JW was the only one that was opping that way. Like thinking of the other oppers at that time, like there was Guardian, One other guy that was like big was like Nico J. And Kenny was kind of coming about at that time, but JW, I feel like you were actually the pioneer of it. Like, I don't, Kenny probably was the early master of that style, like really made it sick. And I mean, you did too, actually, like in later years and everything. Actually, you did pretty early too. I don't know. You guys were battling kind of one and two for sick, aggressive opping. So, yeah.
Yeah. I wouldn't say, obviously, I'm a bit biased, but I think in that regards as well, I get kind of overlooked because people more remember Kenny S because.
Yeah.
He, as you said, maybe he managed to master it more than I did. But like when it comes to people talking about the op nerf and whatnot, everyone is only mentioning Ken S. Like it's only nerfed because of Ken S. And I mean,
yeah,
I think I was there as well. And I think, sure, Kenny probably took like some inspiration from me and made it maybe even better. But yeah, I feel like I tend to get overlooked in many of these topics.
Sure.
I mean, if people want to do what they tend to do nowadays and just go purely off of the HLTV ranking, you did beat him 2 years in a row at the beginning of the game. Like, I don't know why. I'm not taking that at face value.
That was like, the era when if you're in the better team, though, you just got the higher place, to be fair, you know. So,
yeah, that's what we've had this conversation before in that regard. But, like, I mean, I watched this a couple of years ago. So, like, it's pretty fresh in my memory. Like, you guys were both really the only ones doing this kind of crazy stuff.
Yeah. But here's what I will say. The other thing is, it's your turn, Maui. But the other thing about Kenny S was he had crazy cultural impact. Like, the joke is, Kenny S is the reason that, like, Asimov's skin was the most famous AWP skin ever. Because, like, it was, like, the magic stick or whatever he called it or whatever. Like, back then, people didn't think to do branding stuff. But they actually made literally that skin, like, iconic. Like, the joke is he even sold it years later for, like, loads of money or something. Like, that was, like kind of a cool idea. Whereas the other problem is, also, JW had loads more good players in his teams for my money. Yeah, it was, like, the all-star team of Sweden at one point in time, so maybe people watched all off my straw flusher. You know, there was so many people to draw your eye away as well. Think about Kenny S team, some of them were 1v9, mate. It was just him, so it made him look like a god.
That's another like true fact. I mean, obviously I was always surrounded by very, very good players that allowed me to play freely and play that playstyle, while as Kenny S, I think, kind of was more forced to play that playstyle because it was needed for them to win the game. Whereas for me, it was more like, it doesn't matter if I die entry here because my team is going to find a way to win anyways. Well, yeah, in his case, it was like he has to get this entry or they're going to lose the round.
Yeah.
So yeah, that is a good point.
Put it this way, I remember that one period when Kaylee was banned for cheating and they had to bring RPK back, who had been retired for like 2 years. And so the team was just like Kenny S 1v9 and like the odd Apex game where he killed some people. And put it this way, all you need to know, guys, of how ridiculous like this team was where they had to do everything with Kenny S, is on the old nuke, not even the rework, so the most CT-sided map ever, I remember a game where they actually dropped Kenny S on a save round and a glass cannon AWP on T-side of the map. Like, that just tells you, like, essentially, that would be like in football if you were just told that you have to score 3 goals every game as the striker. Like, what? That's impossible. Like, we just have to do it, mate, or we lose. Like, they're going to score 2 against us every time. That's the sort of world we're in. So, yeah, the point I'm making is everything was also set up to be really extreme. Like, put it this way, the joke is, if Kenny S hadn't shot everyone, you wouldn't have heard of him. The team would have just died or something, you know. So, fair play. The difference is, though, JW, Kenny S was also, first of all, the recent big-name guest we had on this show just a few episodes back, and also, he no longer plays. So in the end, you win because technically he is not as good as you now. He doesn't even play the game. So in the end, it's like me. Listen, there was a lot of people back in the day, people thought were better than me, JW. But as long as I'm the only one around, I win by default. There you go. Congrats to us for making it.
Yeah, that's the kind of joke I used to make nowadays, that I created my own team now because I can't get benched anymore, right?
Yeah, there you go, exactly.
Like, I'm going to outstand anyone.
Listen, maybe not so great for your teammates, a bit harder for them, but you know, listen, hey, make your own team. He showed you the way, go make your own squad if you want to have the same privilege, same prerogative.
Exactly.
Right, let's get into it. Let's do the episode. By the way, if you haven't noticed, I'm sort of trying to do a thing now where, over the years, I have learned not to just be a pure nerd. I actually have a little bit of back and forth with the guests, how we introduce them, how we warm them up a little bit. Not just like, if you don't know, back in the day, I really do just like call them, barely talk while we're setting the cameras, like test the mic, right, go live, right, oh, we're live, and first point, like, and they have to just be ready, man. It's like
throwing them in. Just do reflections immediately. And in 2012, you played with these players.
I do. I really do. But the thing is, I have learned over the years, you can't just take someone and just throw them straight in the swimming pool all the clothes. I'm like, what the fuck, I'm drowning. Like, so it's okay. We've warmed up. We've all warmed up. Now we're all ready to go. So JW, we always let the guests go first. So what good point? What's good in CS at the moment, mate?
So my good point, obviously it comes from where I am right now in my career, I think, but also from like where I'm coming from. So my good thing would be the resurrection of the smaller and like local lands, which is basically due to the VRS. I think a good example is, I think next weekend we're going to a local LAN here in Sweden where we have NIP. We have nine. We have people coming from, like, I think one Ukrainian team. We have a German team. I think we have a Polish team. I mean, people are coming for the VRS.
So not the Swedish teams, then, right? Okay.
Exactly. So it's even people from all around basically for the Valve ranks. And I think the total prize pool is something like, I don't know, like 50k Swedish, which is like 5k USD. Okay. And you get NIP. You have Eyeballers. You have nine Alliance. And these Searson Keto guys coming from Germany, I mean, you're getting a lot of teams for these smaller lands due to this VRS, which I think is really important. Sure, now the LAN is in Sweden, but that also means that all these upcoming Swedish teams and players, they can gather a mix or they can gather a team or whatever and just go to this tournament and try their luck, you know, similar to what Copenhagen Games was back in the days. And I think that will probably come more in other countries as well, more like smaller lands. I think that's a really good thing, and I think it's really important for the future of the scene overall. There has to be something to play. I mean, I used to think back on Fnatic, for example. By the end there, we made a roster change and we picked up Jaquinho. I mean, he had to go from basically playing online Swedish games to Tier 1, to like the biggest matches in the world. And that's a big leap to take. You can't expect anyone, I think, to do that big leap. Sure. and make it really, really good. I mean, that's really hard. So you need this like middle ground level where people can develop and go forward within their crafts, I believe.
What do you think, Maui?
Yeah, I feel like Bragadelphia is the one that's closest to me, where it's going to be, and I guess technically Launer's LAN, you know, giving those lands some sort of gravitas that's actually going to draw international teams as opposed to just the ones that would normally drive there, makes those kinds of competitions kind of more of an attraction. Like, I technically haven't decided if I'm going to go visit Fragadelphia in Vegas, because I think it's a 3-hour drive for me. But I've definitely considered it. Like, I'm kind of thinking, like, with my girlfriend, do we want to make a weekend out of this, go to Vegas? Because, you know, it's a fun place to go anyways. And then, you know, showing face and seeing a few people. Like, I haven't seen Snappy in person for quite some time now, so it'd be kind of cool to just pop on over.
The joke is you can both hate on Falcons now, mate. Enjoy. No, it won't be awkward.
Totally. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I don't have to just like talk about his salary anymore. I think it's cool. I think it's cool. I feel like it's something that because those events before really didn't tell you a lot, but now actually, like, for example, the last Fragadelphia had, I think Blue Jays won it, who was like, I don't know, I would consider them the fifth best American team right now, or something. Nice. But it gives some legitimacy to what they've been doing online, because there's a reason for them to go. And I think that's my main point with this, is that for the teams that were like the top of ESL Challenger League, formerly known as ESCA Premier, they wouldn't really have a reason to go to the local LAN in America or travel to it, because you're not gonna get a lot out of it. Not many teams are actually playing in that are in the top 75 in the world. But now that there's VRS on the line, a lot of people think, oh, this is easy pickings, that yes, I can just get some points from this to help me with my major or MRQ campaign. And so then seeing them play in person, and then like Frag Vegas, it's like, I'm gonna see, if I go to it or anybody watches it online or anything, like, you're gonna see like four of the best eight American teams going to it, just because it actually just makes it more of an attraction. So I think that's a net positive.
Sure. I will say, by the way, one reason, I mean, actually, the VRS angle, I actually like that as well as not just it's the new lens, but the VRS enables it. Because one of the things, if people don't know, at the beginning of the year when they first implemented this, this is exactly the opposite of what was going to happen. There was all problems with how the invites worked with VRS. That actually meant I was told there wouldn't be lands like this, because at the time you had to like invite teams above a certain level. And also it meant something weird, like you couldn't only invite like, you know, the three good teams from your country. You had to like, it was some bizarre thing that at the time, I think they figured they changed the rulings over the last few months, which is why this is now gone the way it has. And then also the other thing is, one of the reasons back in the day, I always say this particularly about the Swedish scene, JW, so in a minute I'm going to throw it back to you, but basically back in the Swedish scene, it was totally common, even if you were literally in the best team in the world, you still went to local Swedish lands. Now true, often not with your real team, you'd often go with a mixed team, you know, you take like you and someone, or Get Right and someone go there. And I can tell you one of the obvious reasons back in the day, but this is actually what VRS is almost making up for now, one of the reasons back in the day is people didn't make very much money even if they won tournaments and had salary back then. So you also used to just go to win the tournament, you know, like you say it's like $500 or something like that, and it's a local one in Sweden or not too far away, and like could be in Norway or Denmark or something. You go with a mixed team, and the idea is, even if you get right and you're in like SK or Fnatic, it's probably still worth it to try and win $100 or $200. That might still be worth it to you. And then also, as well as keeping your skills fresh, actually, that was, I agree with you, that's the obvious reason I've always said as to why like the talent pipeline slowed down. Because think about how people get cheat accused now, or you just can't, or people are just idiots socially, they can't get into the top teams. If you just went to these lands, by the way, people like Get Right. This is how they got known. They'd go to these lands, and then all of a sudden, they weren't just some kid in their bedroom who people thought cheated, or you could go there. And if you actually, by the way, in some qualifier, like beat the fucking top team, I mean, I'm thinking even of that Sweden Cup, like 2 years ago, or whatever it was, where like the NIP team were config and a few of them went, and they lost to like fucking Plopsky's mixed team or whatever. That's like a really good way to immediately get your name back in the headlines. And sometimes the team that you beat at those qualifiers even then recruits you. They just go like, fuck it, just get this guy in. Like, don't you think that's part of like, that's got to play some role in why Sweden's kind of diminished in CS now, right?
Yeah, yeah, definitely. I mean, I think also for my career, like, I think I there is a possibility I don't even have a career if it wasn't for Copenhagen Games, for example. I mean, we went there, it was an open LAN, we qualified for the main tournament, we beat like Navi, we beat these couple of teams, you know, where we just showed ourselves and people started to look at us, and
sure,
2, 3, 4 months later we become Fnatic.
Yes.
So these things are incredibly important. And as you said, I think back in the days in 1.6, I think most like local lands in Sweden, you had like everyone from like SK there, but they were all split up in different,
yes,
mixed teams. And that also turns it into a rivalry between those. Like, you,
yeah,
want to be,
yeah,
the best within SK, you know, you want to be the,
sure,
one who wins this. So like everyone is actually doing serious tactics and whatnot,
yeah,
and actually want to win. And that puts pressure on everyone to be at their best. And then these guys that are not playing in SK, they have to step it up. And yeah, it's just all good things, I think. And I think like the last couple of years, I think people in Sweden overall, like you don't go to a LAN tournament even locally,
yeah,
if you're not getting everything paid, if you're not getting like 100% of the prize pool, you're gonna get everything paid basically. So we've been a bit spoiled, I think. But now due to the VRS, people see the possibility of, sure, I can invest here and go to this from my own money, and should we do good, we can climb, we can get invited to stuff online, and we can actually start a career, right? So yeah, I think it's really, really good. And I'm looking forward to next weekend to play a like smaller local LAN again.
Yeah, a little fun fact for people who might not know. Look, the joke is, at the time, at the end of 1.6, you were the nobodies who were trying to prove yourselves to the famous players. Because people don't know, people like JW and Olofmeister, at the end of 1.6, did go to some of those Swedish lands. They just weren't famous players at the time. They were like just up and coming at the end of 1.6. And obviously, they were very young in comparison. And also, another thing, if people don't know, this is actually how, by the way, people like Olofmeister became famous in CSGO. I remember before that, even was your team, obviously he didn't join until Fnatic, it was when him was in the LGBT team, which at the time wasn't a sexual movement or identity or whatever, like that was actually the name of the team. It was a Norwegian org or whatever, that they went to that like Swedish Cup where they played like NIP in some like super close game or something, when they had like, fuck it, I can't remember, oh, Twist and all those people, Sype,
yeah,
all those people.
I think it was Twist, Sype, Krims, Olof,
Dennis.
And the last guy I think was
Dennis,
some,
right?
Friend. Yeah, I think Dennis joined them later, I think,
right.
First it was some friend of a Twist,
fair enough, right.
And if I recall correct, LGB stands for Let the Games Begin.
There you go.
Oh,
some old history there.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. By the way, one other thing as well. Just have to do this, Maui. Purely self-indulgent aspect. The only event Thorin got hired to last year was obviously the Alisa Masters. And I have to say, when the original VRS was announced, I can tell you just straight up, they just told us to our faces at the event, like, look, because of the new system coming in, you're probably never doing this event again. As in, basically, we're not going to be able to get good enough teams if we do this. Like, you know, they're doing another one, but it's like a Finnish LAN, mm-hmm. isn't it? Or like a Nordic LAN. They were like, the problem is we're not going to be able to do an international tournament like this where you can have, like, you know, the 7th best team and the 13th best team and the 20th best team. Because the problem is, think about it, guys. Like, when, first of all, I'm sorry. I don't love CS so much I'm going to do it for free. Like, those days have gone. I have given you 23 years of my life. Like, I don't feel like I need to give more at this point in time. But also, like, for them to even make sense to hire people like me, Richard Lewis and Maui, like, they have to have the decent teams there to get the sponsors to get, you know, it all follows one after another. So I will say, don't get your hopes up yet. Don't do that. Because, not least because I could fuck it up. Who knows? Who knows what the fuck I'll tweet tomorrow? But technically, it's not impossible. There could one day be another event that me and Maui work. That could happen. So that's another, even though it's a purely selfish reason, that's fuck all do with fans, players. If you actually want to see us on camera again, not just doing a talk show like this, you have to hope that these smaller, medium-sized lands take off.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's very possible. Thorin and Maui at Fragadelphia.
That would be hilarious, I have to say. I know.
Okay,
right.
I can move to mine.
Yeah, let's go to Maui's good point.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so my good point here is that I this is just a conversation that kind of erupted in the green room today, and I thought, why not make this my good point?
Okay,
where it's, you know, Richard's kind of holding on to that, like, the level of top CS or whatever like that is not what it used to be, or, and I don't know, he kind of has this like rose-tinted glasses of like of how people played back in 2018 or 2019, and it's like,
oh, he's still holding on to the Astralis shit, right? Okay.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, a little bit like that, but I'm just going to go counter to that and say, I'm saying the good thing is, I'm not going to go all the way down to like the ranks 8th through 15th ranked teams or whatever like that, but if you look at how like the top three teams play right now, even you could extend it a little bit to throw in like Na'Vi and Mongols, Eternal Fire on their good days. I think the level of CS that the top teams are playing, and I am mostly speaking of Vitality and MAUs right now, is exceptionally high. Like, exceptionally high. I think the level of execution between everybody on Vitality and MAUs right now is shaping up. I know it's one-sided in that Vitality keeps winning it, but it's getting a lot closer, as we saw at last Open Lisbon. And I'd say that the level of CS that they're playing as a whole, in terms of individuals, tactics, the teamwork, like, the spacing is so good for some of these players, the trading's so good, the ideas that they have in the mid-rounds, like, everybody's clutch factor is super high. We're seeing one of the best players of all time in Zywu go off in these kinds of games and kind of need to actually take down this MAUs team. So I just think the level of CS between the top 2, 3, 4 teams is just absurdly high on so many levels.
What do you think, JW?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely agree. I think it comes back again to like nostalgia memory. You look back and think so much better of the past. But I do agree that there's a insanely high level, and I think it also goes down so much into the details. Like, it's the details that are so sharp right now. I think. I mean, put it back in the days, we barely had a coach even. I mean, we had a manager that was doing like a manager and coach job, while as today you have an analyst, you have a coach, you have someone just finding smokes, you have someone like just looking at timings. Like, you pretty much have like an NBA team around you, it feels like.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I do agree that the level is insanely high, combined with the like individual form of people. I mean, Mongols is a fresh team on my mind. Like, when they hit this, I don't know, this peak that they can hit sometimes, it looks like nobody can out-aim them. And I agree that the top level right now is insanely good.
Right, I'll give you an analogy for one of the reasons why, Maui. I've got a few reasons for you I was thinking of when you talked about that. One is, there's a concept, which I will say, I'm just introducing this as like a thought, a bit of food for thought. This isn't actually like a hard science thing. There's a concept you probably heard of. It's called the 100th monkey effect or whatever, which, by the way, that's not Thorin getting in some sort of political trouble. This is pure, this is about, that's about real monkeys, science. I have to allude to my, I have to make my own past part of the meme, Mario. That's how you sort of sanitize it, you know. So the 100th monkey, whatever it's called, principle or some effect or something, is the idea. Mm-hmm. This is why I'm using it just as an analogy. As far as I know, people say it's debunked or it doesn't work or whatever. Basically, the premise goes, people claim if you did these tests on monkeys, then when you would then later test other monkeys that were unrelated with the same test, it they over time, they were like the them solving the test, like doing a maze or something like that, the time would get lower and lower and lower. It didn't make sense because there was no connection between them. And so it's essentially, without going into a whole side thing, some people think it's like the idea that, I don't know, there's like a collective mental thing or some genetic thing between creatures and like they were improving. The reason I bring that up is that's not what I'm saying is happening here. But if you think of that as a concept, but instead of it being just monkeys with no connection and it's a mystery, the monkeys that were playing the game in this sense, the pro players, actually did watch the game and play each other. And the whole premise, one of the most underrated things in Counter-Strike and sports, in my opinion, is it's not really that the player today is like a genius or evolved in like a few years in a fucking video game. It's that because he got to watch Astralis play in 2018, and then all the teams played Astralis in 2018, and then all the coaches watched them, and then the next team that came along, everyone basically gradually learns and gets taught by the people who pioneer the game concepts in the meta and push them out. I mean, the most obvious example ever is the, just think of utility usage alone. Back in the day, it was like a couple of teams. The joke is Flusher alone was using utility like that a whole team would use now. People just didn't even use it back then, and so he was like way ahead of everyone. Because the joke here, I remember him saying in an interview, someone said, how do you have the highest damage? And like, because he is just like kind of a savant, he was like, I just throw the grenade when I see them. But that was actually a mind-blowing concept, Maui. Back then, people like, yeah. as if they were in like a bad matchmaking game, people just threw grenades randomly. They would just throw it, like if they were holding small sight on Inferno on CT, they'd just throw a grenade randomly around the corner, like, maybe he's there. Like, Flusher was just going like, well, I can see he's there. Well, you can, like, the obvious joke's going to insert themselves here. How do you know he was around the wall or whatever? Anyway, you get the joke. But he would just wait till he actually saw the person or heard something, then he would throw the grenade. And by the way, that was actually a revolutionary, like, level-up way to use a grenade, as mad as it sounds. So I think if you take that analogy and apply it to everything, how do you do like a basic split onto a site? How do you layer utility and when do you go in and what timing stuff? Essentially, everyone, even the most mid-level tier one pro, has like an understanding of that. That's closer to Astralis 2018 than the other top teams were to Astralis 18 back then, if you know what I mean. Like, it sort of leveled everyone up. So that's like an obvious reason as to why just playing gets you up. It's also why, by the way, I actually think JW probably is a lot more fair in actually giving it up. If you were one of the players, it's a bit like in sports, if you were one of the players who had retired 5 years ago, you could easily just hate and be like, oh, these kids would have never beaten us. Like, well, you still play now, mate, so you know if you play a scrim how good they are, Sarah. I notice it's like that with sports pros. Some of them give credit to the youth skill, some of them are hating them, like they never compete in my day. And then the other two reasons I had was, one is I do think that, like you say, people don't know how much of a difference it makes to have like coaches who are actually thinking about this. So it's not just products has to come up with everything the night before. This is what people wouldn't realize. The circumstances were so different. Back in the day, you might finish a game at 1 a.m. The next game might be at 9 a.m. And if you're products and or Devil Walk and or Samuelson or whatever, good luck. You just don't get to sleep. You get 3 hours sleep because you have to watch 5 demos of TSM or whatever for the next day. And by the way, that's going to be super scoffed research when you're just watching it all tired at night, watching a demo, like, fuck, what can I get? In the modern day, not only are there professional coaches, half of the shit Maui gets in terms of his stats is he uses that, like, Anders program, Skybox Edge, where you can just look at, like, all the strats a team does on a map, etc. Bro, if you could go back in time, the joke is, if I could get in a time machine, it's not that I'd take Donk back. Bro, I would just take that tool back. That tool alone would counter, like, Olaf, because I remember back in the day when Olaf was the best player in the world. I once asked him at a LAN, I said to him, you do watch like POVs and stuff for the opponent to like scout them. And he was like, no, why would I? I'm the best. And I was like, well, that works now when no one does it. But fuck, what happens when it's like sports and everyone's watching all your clips? So he was just lucky back then. No one else was doing it. Like everyone just played the game. And like I said, there wasn't time for everyone to watch them. I think people underestimate how things like that just are going to level everyone up. And like I say, with those tools, for real, it's actually, if you've never used them, guys, they're so OP. You can genuinely go right now, if I had it open, I could just, as we're talking, be like, right, eyeballers in all the CCTs they played and qualifiers, right, when they played Dust 2, how many times did they mid to be? And I could just tell you, like, oh, they do it 78% of the time, and it always starts with like a flash that goes in a short to fit. Bro, even if you watch 5 demos, you might not get that pattern, or you might not know how the free, like, that's OP. What do you think, JW? I'm sure it's very different from your day, right?
Yeah, I definitely agree. And I think, as you said as well, like back in the days, it sounds it might sound wrong, but I mean, people were so much more stupid back in the days as well.
Sure.
As you said, like, you build up a round, and you just have that round, and you think, like, this is the round, right? And then you had Pronax, for example, checking 2-3 demos, and you see, okay, if this smokes comes, it's always going to be this round.
Yes.
But today you have all these teams, they have set it up. Like, now people understand this and think about this and, like, do maybe 5 rounds with that smoke. And you can never, like, know exactly what smoke it is. I mean, we have developed so much. And I think also, I think back in the days, people used to ask me when like, new whoppers came up, like, why is this guy, like, becoming so much better, so faster than maybe what you are, and blah, blah. And I think it's the same thing there. I mean, I used to watch this Nico, Danish Nico whopper. I stole a lot from him, and I made it better. Maybe Kenny watched some of me, made that better. Next guy watches Kenny, makes that better. I mean, all this time that I spent doing my thing, someone can kind of steal from me within, yeah, a couple of hours, basically.
Yes.
And that just goes up the ladder, I think.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And as you said, the Skybox thing, like, should we have had that back in the days? I mean, everything would have looked so much different, I think. So much different.
The thing is, though, logically, though, even though I made the joke, it would have counted all off if he didn't do it. You actually would have still been okay, mate, because the joke is they couldn't have studied that you were going to do that jump over the Molotov, because you didn't even know you were going to do that until 1 second before. No. So you would have still been safe. That you'd be okay.
Yeah, I would have been safe from Skybox.
Yeah, I think it's almost... Well, I just think the whole conversation of, like, if you dropped... It kind of sucks to do this argument. Like, I did it on a hot take point made a long time ago where I said Monacy today is better than Simple was, or not Simple, Kenny S was at his prime. You know, it's like he's just learned a million things from all the Kenny S demos, from Device's demos, from JW, from all these people from the past, that he's just going to take all the good parts of their games, filter out all the bad stuff. And unless he is mechanically inferior on top of that, he's already probably just going to be smarter about what he does. So it's kind of just unfair. Like, I should have saved this for hot take point made also, but another argument we kind of had in the green room was, like, I said, if you put today's Maus in 2018 with all of the skill set and knowledge that they have, they'd run the whole scene. They'd run
how
the whole scene.
How dare you, sir?
Yeah, you know, it's just completely unfair, though, because they just know everything that everybody in 2018 and 2019 did. Okay. Like, I think, and skill-wise, they're definitely matching the people. Okay. Like, I mean, I know this might hurt people's heads to hear, but it's like, exertion at his peak is matching, you know, prime Dupree. He's like, dude, he's so fast. His skill is so high. Yeah. His skill is incredibly high. If you put exertion in 2018, he would look like the best player on the planet, I think.
I will say, though, as I will always point out, whenever you do those debates, the reason they work if they're separate areas and they never meet is because then they can't actually learn from each other. The problem you'd have is, if you put Maus there and they won the first few tournaments, then Astralis would obviously watch what they were doing and they'd figure it out. So it would also level everyone up as well. Also, here's the real one that'll bake your noodle. What if, follow me, Twilight Zone, imagine a world where time travel did exist. What if what actually happened was, that's why Simple was so much better than everyone. He did travel back in time from, like, the 2020s. He went back to, like, 2015. He went back too far, actually. He was too young. And as a result, then when he became insane, he was, like, so much ahead of everyone. That's why he has to sock now and he isn't allowed to play. It's not Maui, because actually he doesn't have a thing and he's got his contract with Na'Vi. It's one of those, like, grandfather paradoxes. If he plays now, there'll be two versions of him in this time, so it'll be unfair. So that's it. Just think about it. Think about that. It's a deep
something I'll consider. Yeah, but I'll consider.
What's funny is that 30-second thing there was better than most of those skits ESL does, because mine wasn't just copied off a movie with different words instead of names. So
just,
whatever.
This is madness.
I didn't have the same production value. To be fair, it would have been a lot cooler if I actually had. I'd let, you know, fucking camera come in and then Chad, like, wait, Marty, we've got to go 88 miles per hour, however the fuck that. Yeah, again, I'm actually just doing their skit there, and then Stunner, like, oh, fucking. Stunner would just be Biff, obviously. We'll write the whole skit out later, Marty. It's all good. We'll get it all done later on. I don't know who would be Marty McFly. That's be a bit cruel on that one to pick one. Right, let's go on. My good point is going to be one that's very... Look, it's aged very badly for the moment, but people have got to stop. I've told you before, Maui, if the analogy when something's a take doesn't work is you go, that's aged like milk, it can't then have a chance to turn around, because if milk goes off, leaving it doesn't ever make it come back to being good to drink. It's permanently off there. In fact, it technically gets worse. In fact, it becomes cheese at the end eventually. So even though people do rush to say that age like milk, right? Even though today, the day of filming, was the day where the new Team Liquid team actually got destroyed by fucking Legacy, who, by the way, I don't care what anyone says, isn't good at CS. So it's actually really alarming because obviously everyone's hoping. I mean, the joke, who was it? Was it Lawrence or someone? Was like, they didn't even have a honeymoon. Like, that's actually a funny tweet, by the way. Whoever said that is a banger.
That is hilarious.
That's pretty good. Because obviously we always say you get like the fake honeymoon for 2 weeks or whatever. But with that said, I'm going to delete that from my mind for the moment because I don't think that's going to be the level this team plays at. I imagine they just had like, I don't know, fucking 3 days of practice or something, or he just turned up to the line and they didn't scout anyone and all that shit. And he hasn't played an official game in a fucking million years, etc. But I'm going to say that Shuhei joining Team Liquid is a good point. That's going to be my good point because I do think, on paper, this just makes sense for both parties. I actually also think, being as it's been long enough now, we presume like he's not going to get an offer from like FaZe Clan or fucking G2 or something. If he's going to anyway be at like the slightly lower level or whatever, I actually think the Team Liquid squad he's getting, especially now Twist is just going to be a rifle again. Bro, if you look where CS is right now, despite what you just said about the level, you were talking about the general meta. I think if you look at the top 5 to 6 teams, and you look at there are teams like former Eternal Fire, now Aurora in there, Mongols, teams that actually haven't even done it on the big arenas yet. They haven't won big tournaments. I think if Team Liquid, or this roster, if they get their shit together, they could be top 5 pretty quickly. Like, they've got some really good players here. And I do think Shuhei was a good IGL. I don't think he was like fucking prime Carrigan or something, but he clearly had like potential. He's a good player. And so I think that is a good move. I am actually very positive about that. But I want to get you guys' thoughts and we can go a bit more. But JW, what do you think of this move?
I totally agree. I think it's a great move. I said it ever since it came. I think, sure, it's also really good for Shuhei, or how you pronounce his nickname. But I think for me, the biggest W is probably Twists, that he gets like more enabled. I was never really a fan when I heard or saw that he was turning the IGL. Sure, I mean, he's smart. He knows the game. He understands the game, obviously. But, I mean, he should be kind of mad fragger. Star player kind of guy, I feel like. I think that's the biggest win in the whole thing. And I think, it makes sense all around the whole move. And we actually practiced them a couple of times before they announced it. And I think Twists is starting to look better and better and better. Right. And I think that's going to be the game changer for this team, I feel like.
By the way, one thing just to quickly ask you, I actually know when I did my reflections with Flusher, which, by the way, I'll just say right now, salute to Flusher. That's what a G Flusher is. Flusher did reflections interviews with me, even though I did say, and I even sort of asked him in the interview, but I did it in a funny way. They're like, did you cheat? Like, that's actually how you know he's legit. In the modern day, mate, pro players are getting like mad over a tweet and like holding a blood feud against you forever. Flush is so legit, he'll just be like, I didn't. Thanks for asking. And fuck you. You know, like fair play. He actually did. But one thing I'll say is, right, mate, this is, if you're Twists, listen, it's okay now. It's safe to come out again. You're not the IGL anymore. There's a real IGL in the room. You can admit it was a mistake, or you can say, are you ready? If you want to see their face, just say the things you've learned will be used in the future when you become an IGL. In 4 or 5 years, we're not as good. And this was just like, you know, a learning experience, and it was worth doing. Do some bullshit political angle, because I will say, we weren't hating when we said it wasn't a good move, mate. One, you're still really good at the game, and that will clearly get detracted from being the IGL. And then two, the other thing is, it's like it takes so much time to get really good at that. It's not just knowing strats and calling. Like, I can tell you when I did my reflections with Flusher, he basically says, JW, even though, by the way, I think he's one of the players, if you think of his style of play, who should have been the most suited to being a fucking IGL. Like, he had a genius read of the game. He even says he actually thinks he shouldn't have IGL'd now, because he basically said, like, not only does it affect your own game, but, like, sometimes you can read the game, but you can't, like, that call doesn't maybe translate to the teammate or whatever, or maybe he doesn't see the game the way you... Basically, I think he just realised it's harder than people realise to be an IGL. It's not just like you fragged it, it's got the same crosshair, and like, just call the strat. Like, the problem is there's so much goes into that role. I do think it's a dedicated role. Like, if you do it... So I give mad props to Apex now. Apex is never going to go back, guys. He understands, like, the rest of his career is I'm an IGL, and that means I'll never be a world-class, like, super entry rifle. Like, that he knows that has gone. The problem with all these stars when they switch is they all think they can still do both, which is like, come on, bro. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think also, like, especially with these, like, star players turning the IGLs, I think they forget that, I think, as you said, being an IGL is about so much more. To me, it's like, it's about being kind of the captain of the team, the soul of the team, the heart of the team, everything about the team. And then you need to think about so much more than the in-game parts, like how you behave outside the server, how you do stuff outside the server, and how you make yourself look to the others. Like, you can't tilt and rage that much. Like, you need to really, you really need to be a captain, I feel like. And that's something I think star players have a hard time being. I think it's very rare to be a star player and a true captain. And that's what you really need to be a great IGL. I feel like you need to be a true captain.
I feel like I don't know how I missed making this my good point.
I know. Actually. It was right up the alley, so I took it, mate. It's all good.
Yeah, I am.
You've only done a million other ones that missed on TL, but sorry, I'll take this one.
Yeah. I mean, this is the perfect landing spot for him, along with the possibility of G2. I feel like I actually, in a funny way, even though I've been incredibly critical of Snax in his in-game leader role on that team, I actually think he's been doing a better job than Twist has lately as a captain. As a caller, which...
So, I know you're spinning that as a positive. I took that as a diss against Swiss, but fair enough. Okay, it's all good.
It kind of is. I've also said before I thought that Twist was one of the weakest, if not the weakest, IGLs in, like, the top 10. So, of teams, you know, of any team that was in the top 10 recently, I think him and Electronic were kind of in a battle to the bottom there, for becoming, like, less than the sum of their parts. I mean, I'm glad that Twist is relieved of the duties as an in-game leader. I'm glad that Shuhei's on the team because I just checked while you were making the point. When he joined MAUS, the HLTV ranking he had was 12th, and then they actually got to number one in the world.
Okay.
And I would say that with that roster that he was with, I don't think many people looked at that and said, yeah, this is going to be a world number one. So I think he got more than people expected out of his team, and I think Brolin's doing a similarly great job actually with MAUS. But I just think that with Shuhei, it makes me just believe that there is a ceiling that could contest with the elite teams now. When I was watching them play with Twist, they would get bogged down on their T sides, especially, but with really lazy finishing calls. Like, it was just. Man, I feel like two calls in particular that just irked me to no end when I was watching a Liquid game is that I could count, and sometimes I would have to take two hands to count on a single T side. How many times are they going to run up Porch with one shitty flashbang on Inferno and just run into a crossfire? And how many times are they going to run out door on Nuke with also just like one flash at the Asia event? You know, I was like, this is so lame. Like, you have all these pieces that could probably come together in cool ways, you know, with good map control and anything like that. But it just felt like it was super lazy at the end of these rounds. And just like, you're not really trying to put any greater picture together. You're not trying to sell a fake. And it's like, for having so much explosive firepower, maybe like, just do a split. Just do a split for fuck. Like, I just want to see two groups of people try to converge on a bomb site together. But he was just trying to brute force stuff. And I get it. You look on paper at who's on your roster and you say, we could just bust into these bomb sites. But like, come on, Counter-Strike's just not like that anymore. Everybody in the top 10 can kill you if they have a good crossfire, or even if you have slightly better aimers. It's not a pure aim duel. It's about creating a favorable situation for yourself and taking something away from the opponents in terms of their angles. So no, I'm just super glad. I'd say like the only thing about this is like, you know, I thought JKS was weak for a while for this team, but I didn't think I still kind of in a weird way, even though he sort of got scapegoated here, I don't think this was all his fault.
No.
I feel like him and Naf just were a bit both passive. And they just had a hard time coexisting. I also still think he's a really solid anchor. I mean, like, anchoring's hard. Anchoring's really hard in CS2. So I just think that he probably got hard done by this. You know, him and Naf were both having a hard time. So, but they just had to keep the two Canadians for the VRS and kind of for cultural continuity of the roster.
Of course.
You're keeping the Liquid people for sure. Like, the guys that have been
there's an obvious bias towards Naf, of course, in the org. I mean, first of all, he's always doing them a favor staying. He could have been a bloody face guy or something himself years ago. By the way, a couple of things on that. First of all, I agree on the JKS point. His problem was this. He can do things in the game that I still think are like a tier one level, but I'm with you, Maui. The problem was, if Twists, because he was IGLing, had a bad game, and then Ultimate had a bad game, you had no firepower, so it meant you were just going to look at JKS's red score and go, fuck, kick him. Like, it was the obvious person that would get kicked. Also, I'll just do my joke from Twitter because not everyone sees Twitter always. It's also just too on the nose. It's like some surrealist fucking nightmare that an Australian player got kicked for someone called Shuey. Like, Give me a fucking break. Is this so, did you write that skit, Chad? Is it actually reality in ESL skit? Because that is some Mad Libs level shit. Like, the sad thing is that tweet just probably ruined your skit. I bet when I tweeted that, they were like, no, fuck. Matt, we have to start again. Has anyone seen any movies? Have you seen like Jerry Maguire or something? Like, fuck. Because I mean, the joke then is then they'll do Jerry Maguire with like monitoring. Show me the money. Oh, there's another skit out the way. Like, fucking hell, how many movies is there left, guys? Look up the IMDb top 250. There's still some movies left to do. Still some skits out there, yes. Also, two other things quickly. One, I also think the thing people underestimate now is if this really unleashes Twists and he's really good again, bro, Nerds and Twists is going to fucking cook. Think about how good they could be. And like you said, the explosive, they're both aggressive riflers. Because actually, our boy Nero on HLTV did an article about this. And by the way, he just showed on the stats that aside from Anubis, that one weird map they were good at, they literally had below average stats on all the other five maps that they playmate. All of them. Yep. Like, and some of them were really bad, by the way. Like, obviously, everyone knows they used to lose every fucking Dust 2. They were appalling on Dust 2. That is impossible with the aggressive firepower they had. Like, that tells me your IGLing system, it doesn't have to be the IGL, but your system did not work. It just did not work. Were you going to say something, JW? Look, you're going to jump in there or something?
No, I mean, I just agree all in all with everything that's been said. And I think when it comes to JKS and NEF, I used to say this today as well. I think I said it to Torin before the show. I see kind of similar with like Blame F and Cringe right now in Fnatic. I think like playstyles can not mash up very well, and sure, you can, one player can make the other player look worse because he's maybe doing better that yes, the other guy is maybe doing his best or whatnot. So yeah, I definitely think that it was the right thing to remove either one of JKS or NAF, but
yeah,
makes most sense to keep NAF based on everything. And yeah, I think it's, I'm looking forward to see them. I think they need more time, obviously. Yeah, I think, as you said, they can really cook with that duo.
Also, by the way, if you want a good example of how it doesn't have to be one person was the problem, that old fucking meme that still exists 10 years later for some reason. I don't know why. I've always said this, right? When a team really has problems, it's never one person's the problem. One person's just the biggest problem, or you hope that you're bringing in someone who's more of a solution. So here's the obvious example of how it isn't that one of the players has to suck. Bro, I think Rops and Frozen did do this to each other last year, but now that they're separate, they're both better. They're actually both really good now that they're in separate teams, and there's no overlap at all. Like, they found their squad, so I hope it could be the same scenario for, like, maybe JKS does go to FlyQuest, he's like some super sick anchor, or he goes to some other squad. Who the fuck knows what's going on? You have to ask Chad, aka his unofficial agent.
I actually got a bit surprised back then that they made it work that good, because that was my biggest question mark when they brought Frozen in. I was like, they're kind of going to disable Rops.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, they're not going to enable each other, I felt like. But somehow they made it work incredibly good. Shout out to Kerrigan for that, perhaps. But yeah, I feel like people used to overlook some of these things because who's available right now? Okay, this guy looks really good. Yes. Put him in. But they don't think about the roles perhaps clashing or whatnot. So yeah, I think it was a smart choice.
Yeah. And also, I will just do one of those things where I tease people. In the future, I will have some more stuff about when Rops was in phase. But as usual, I have to get a bit of lead time to make it safe. And especially, I have to make it so that if I say something about a player, they can't guess who told me. I have to wait till there's enough like ripples get out there that everyone's safe. I do it like the Cold War, mate. I can't let my agents, my double agents, get known, because then I'm fucked at that point in time. So I need it to never be that you have to guess if I'm just tweeting about some player on your team. Is he just making that show? Is he guessing that? Like, I need it to be like that. I can't. If you find my agents, I'm fucked at that point in time. Not least because, spoiler, not everyone likes me. So I don't have like five players in each team. I've got like a couple of moles, but I haven't got that many more. So it's all good. Right. Let's move on then.
Well, yeah, I mean, I was going to say that, you know, unlike Twist's calls, which really stunk up the place, you can actually smell great. We are, a reminder, sponsored by Mando, which is a whole body deodorant. You could use this absolutely anywhere on your body. And it was created by a doctor who saw firsthand how normal body odor was being misdiagnosed and mistreated, as it is clinically proven to block odor all day and control odor for up to 72 hours. They have a bunch of scents. I've talked before about how I love the Mount Fuji scent. I've also tried out the bourbon leather scent at this point.
Yeah.
I think it smells super good. I think it's kind of like the right blend of kind of manly spicy, but not over the top where it just feels like a locker room. Like it's just right in the, it's right where it needs to be. But they have other ones like Clover Woods too, which is great. And you can try Mando and its starter pack, and you can actually get $5 off with our exclusive code, which is CS2, and you'll be able to use that on their website at shopmando.com, which is shopmando.com. Reminder, using our code CS2, just two letters and a number.
Yes.
So yeah, make sure you guys don't stink up like Twist's calls.
Yes.
Get some Mando on your body.
But this way, if you had used this twist, then maybe your calling would have been clean. Also, secondly, he said Clover Woods there, not Clover Field. But I'll tell you what, it's real scary how much some people in CS do need better hygiene, man. That's fucking unbelievable if you think of that. That's like a rap battle bar. But replay that one, guys. You're going to have to think about that one. That's unbelievable. Anyway, and lastly, I'll also throw it out there. Spoiler, back in the day, this isn't even a troll. I'm not just saying this part for effect. I won't say who. I'll keep this really vague because it really hurts someone's feelings if they ever knew this. But way back in the day, there was once a scenario where a friend of mine who was like a team org owner asked me, like, should I sign this player? And this will sound mad, but I even said, look, as a player he's good, but I'm not even joking, in real life he has really bad BO. And I said, I know that sounds mad, but you are going to be around him all the time, so all I'm saying is, if it's like neck and neck between him and another person, give him a smell. Like, if they're okay, I'd rather not have that guy in the van. Now, I'm not saying that did or didn't get this guy in the team. We'll leave that completely vague. Also, the great thing is, if you talk about 10 years ago, this could be anyone, by the way. It could be like 50 teams out there. But I'll say, yeah, people definitely back then did not appreciate Maui, the problem of sweating too much in the game. Anyway, let's move on. Now that we've got all that out of the way, so wait, now I've actually turned ad segments into like, that's my time to be on the desk.
Just a little roast.
2015, I know, yeah. Exactly. The difference is, guys, it's okay to do it on YouTube. I can't lie. When I do look back, it is kind of mad. I used to just do that shit like on the majors at like the World Championship. Part of me was wondering, JW, like, that's why I always give Valve credit. You think about, you hear about all these stories about like Blizzard and Riot, how they're all like controlling and shit like that. Like, how did Valve just like let me do all that and they're not just going, get that guy the fuck out. He's insulting the players. Like, I was going pretty well back in the day.
You literally would just call people ugly at a major. It's like, what the hell? How is this okay?
By the way,
no one was walking safe. No, mate,
especially because, remember, it was all because at the time they just pioneered that technique where when we were talking in the pregame, they would go down the line, wouldn't they, with the camera when the camera went back. Yeah. And that was always where I did the roast of like what the person looks like, even though, again, it's like the most lowbrow humor. Here's one moment, though, where I actually give credit to JW publicly, though. I've said this in the past. In the same way as, even though they have done contact with me, so fair play, they got over it, people like Taz and Fallen actually did get butthurt, I can tell you. They, behind the scenes, sometimes in this little player, like, unofficial union, they did want to get people like me and Richard kicked off the events. They were all going, hey, they're fucking making fun. And I'll give them both credit right now. JW and NBK quite literally did both actually stand up for us in that group and tell people, like, oh, come on, like, they're part of the show, like, they're entertaining people, like, they're adding something. They actually did actually fight for that side, even though, by the way, sometimes JW was one of the victims. He was getting the odd shot, you know?
Yeah, it was never safe. From anyone, to be honest, from anyone.
True. Although, I think I paid you back well. I'm actually the only human in the entire history of Counter-Strike JW who doesn't think you all deserve like the death penalty for doing a fucking triple boost on a map where LDLC just did a shitter two-man boost and saw the exact same pixels on the screen. I've always said that, mate. Everyone retells that story completely wrong. They make you guys the ultimate villains, and then they never even mention that they did it like about three times themselves. Like, they just didn't have as good a boost. Like, in that scenario, it's like America in war. You can't complain. Get good. Get a better army. You should figure out how to beat us in war.
Every time I hear people like retell that story, like everyone mentions that we were offered to replay the CT side.
Yes.
While the offer was to replay the whole map, pretty much, because their boost was just as illegal as ours was.
I think it would have been fair. I'm with you, mate. I remember I was there in the room. The fair decision would have just been replay the whole game and no one does the boosts, wouldn't it? Come on.
Yeah. But then again, we got in a position where it was a lose-lose situation. I feel like, I think today I would probably replay it.
Yes.
When you know better.
Yeah,
all that, but
yeah,
We were younger back then and more vulnerable, I feel like.
And I'll just say this, even though also people like NBK were also friends of mine, and people in that team, Apex, oh, it was actually that squad. The ones who are in that team, I will tell you this though, guys, and you must know in your hearts now you're retired, this is true. The reason you wouldn't accept the entire replay is because you couldn't believe after that first half you were actually leading against Fnatic and you'd almost won the game. You had never beaten Fnatic online with that lineup ever. And in your mind, you were too scared to bring that back and start at 0-0 because what if you just lost the game straight up? I'm just going to say that right now. You know you couldn't handle giving up that 12-3 half or whatever it was. So they know it's true, mate. They never said it at the time. Everyone denied it. But I think that whole thing's so fucking regrettable. Anyway, that's a whole tangent. That's a side tangent. I got fucking inspired. I was back in the moment there. I was back at DreamHack Winter 2014. I was seeing that little guy, that little fucking hobbit guy. By the way, also, that's why it was a lose-lose, Maui, because the guy who was the admin was Swedish. It was a Swedish event in Sweden, and one of the teams is Swedish. Right? You understand, if you ever make the ruling for the Swedish team, that's just remembered as the most corrupt ruling of all time. So they almost had to make the ruling for fucking LDLC at that point in time. And also, it did create what I think is one of the most underrated jokes of all time, because fans just didn't know the backstory, which is, this is not a joke, this is real. That one thing I'll give credit to JW and the Swedes for is both teams were trying to actually forfeit because there was so much drama, and you guys actually beat the French in a battle to surrender first. That's just a fucking classic joke. Not even good. It's low hanging. I feel almost ashamed of myself, but let's face it, I don't have shame. That's my special superpower. Let's keep talking about CS. Right, let's go on. So, JW, aside from all that shit, what is bad in CS at the moment?
It might be an unpopular opinion, maybe not, I'm not sure. But as we touched, as you said before, back when maybe I defended you guys and talking about entertaining, like for me, this is like an entertainment sport, right? It should be more about entertainment and all this. And I think a bad thing, in my opinion, is that there is a lot of lack of like rivalries or perhaps personalities in the top scene. Today, I feel like I mostly watch for the tactical aspect, and I rarely feel like invested anymore in the matchups because, I don't know, just lack of personality. I think like the most entertaining thing recently that comes to my mind was perhaps like JL refusing to shake Santara's hand.
Right, the drama, yeah.
But then I saw the reason behind it, and I was like, are you fucking kidding me? Like,
yeah.
Like, that makes no fucking sense. Like, how have we fallen to this, that you're not going to shake someone's hand because you're getting shot at a dead body in game, right? Like,
I know.
How are we here now? Like, this is an entertainment sport, and sure. we need to entertain people. We need to engage people. And I think that's
okay.
I feel a lack of it.
By the way, speaking of that, though, because I can't miss this obvious insane time. When I say it, you'll know immediately you've set me up for this, JW. One thing that I will also say is, even though I joked earlier, I mean, I'm not joking, I did actually genuinely say I thought Flush were cheating at that point in time. Everyone else, JW, has now, like, retconned history that no one ever thought, and it was only, like, me and people on HLTV forums. Bro, that happened to you at that major. That Hellraisers team, when they beat you, refused to shake their hands, which means, by the way, logically, they all thought it was true at the time, even though now everyone's changed their mind and everyone is like, oh, sorry, you know. At the time, that was real. Like, some players actually did have drama over that shit, right? And wasn't it
if I remember correctly, I think it was actually, I might be misremembering here, but I think Simple was the only guy shaking our hands.
Right.
I think the rest of the Hellraisers guys refused.
I know they were hating, for sure, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, true. And that was real beef. That wasn't fucking someone shot my body in the game. That was fucking, they hated you.
Yeah, I mean, we never felt that unwelcome at a Swedish event.
Yeah, exactly. Sure. By the way, that's also why I also think that event was insane, by the way. If you don't know, guys, the reason why Fnatic were the gangsters is because they didn't even have a home arena. If they went in Sweden, everyone was just a NIP fan. Like, they were being booed in their own fucking country. Like, the one thing you're supposed to have the edge on, that was bullshit. That's why I always thought it was gangster, when Fusha would actually come out like an actual 4chan troll and just, like, laugh and then win the fucking game on stage. I thought it was gangster. That's such fire.
Yeah, I think the only time at that event we had... like insanely cheers, like in Sweden, I think it was during the boost, actually. The crowd was insane for us.
Holy shit.
Okay. The crowd was insane for us during that boost.
Sure.
That's one of the like best memories I have of a Swedish crowd, actually.
Okay, that's a bit dark now, okay.
It is, but we saved it with I think DreamHack Masters Malmö in, I think it was 2019, where we beat Vitality in the final.
Yeah.
Then we had the good Swedish crowd, but back then, like when there was an IP, it was rough.
Yeah. Like, come on then, Maui, because here's the thing. Technically, you could argue you're one of the people who has to be the personality you make up for the bloody players. Like, he's kind of right. Like, most players are kind of like, they've almost gone like, it's like, we're going to sound like boomers again, Maui. This is just, it's the same exact argument from the NBA. These fuckers are all just friends now. And they're all just like, you see some insane game where you want them to be like, I hate you. And then they're like, well played. Good luck in the tournament. You're like, ah, boo. This fucking sucks.
I know.
The fuck?
I think there's like three things that I got with this whole thing. It's like, number one is this. Yeah, I mean, it was when JW was playing in his prime, it was more of the cultural impact era. Like, everything just had so much more gravitas. Yes. And I think the reason that happened was because that was when Counter-Strike was turning from this like hobby, which then suddenly it felt like overnight just everybody started making tens of thousands of dollars, and it just was like you snap your fingers and it was like, and then everybody that was a part of this golden era of all this money coming in was like insanely happy, and they almost knew they were privileged to be there because they're just like, this game that they played just for fun suddenly is now creating a whole livelihood for them, and it's all actually paid off. And so it feels like everybody reached the promised land at the exact same time.
Right.
Like everybody, and so you're, so like the, everybody was just in such a good mood. The cultural impact was so high then. And now it's like people are just like, they're like, oh, if I get like 0.04 rating higher on my stats, then like that means I might be able to get a contract in the next year, which is going to secure me like $15,000 a month or something like that. And it's like the pressure is so much greater for these people because they know the difference between playing for Falcons as Tessus or playing in OG as Nikodaz is like 20K a month. Like,
yeah,
it changes your life. So it's like the stakes are so much higher now. And I think that also too, in a way, people are way more matter-of-factly aware of who's just better or worse. They're like, oh, we are the favorites.
Right.
They are the underdogs. Like we should be beating them, or we are the underdogs. We are happy to be here. And the third thing and the last thing, I've talked about this one before, like with like broadcast talent and interviews, because I think there's got to be something we can do on our end to spice things up, is that I think, and this is the qualifying statement, I think that James Banks is the best interviewer we have in this space. But I also think that sometimes his approach
save that for hot take point made, for fuck's sake.
Well, I mean, I think he's the best interviewer.
It's all right.
On broadcast
of course.
Today. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think he's the best interviewer we have right now on broadcast because he's very to the point, asks good questions, really knows the whole story of everything that's happening. But I also think like people like Paula really served a valuable spot where it's just like he was just goofy. Like he would just go up to a player and say something kind of dumb, and then he would match it with a jokey atmosphere. And that's how you got little lines like Xantara's like, I am feeling thank you, because he just kind of like, he almost threw you off with how rude his question was. Then you would just say something kind of dumb back, and then it led to memes. Like Paula created memes. You know, that's one thing that I feel like we're kind of missing right now is like a meme lord. And Paula was kind of like, he in his own way wasn't like maybe box office, but he definitely led to clips. He was a clip farmer.
Yes.
So we need a clip farmer on the broadcast.
Well, I'll tell you what, in theory we have one, because that is actually, if she does it properly, that is what Donna can do. Like, that's basically what she was doing on Ronin. So I actually think she could fill that role completely. By the way, there's a few angles on this. One, as I alluded to there, the joke in the modern days, even though everyone hates you for it, you're doing it, Maui. You actually have to be, like, I'm not even trolling.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it ends up being whack half the times when these players talk shit, but then it turns out, oh, they're actually just friends and they don't really hate each other. Oh, congrats or whatever. Like, just people wondering if Snacks would do the hooksy to Kassad to you on the desk was probably more tense than half of these fucking handshakes at this point in time. Because I've always said, the biggest letdown ever where players didn't understand the WWE on-camera part was that major final at Stockholm 2021. I always say this, when it was Simple versus Nico, remember, neither of them had a major, so one of us is going to win the major. And when they were asked for, like, the pre-game talk by, like, Banks, they were just for real doing things like, I just hope we both have a great game. And they're like, good luck, Sasha. It's like, oh, this is the cheers. Imagine that before a UFC fight. Like, I want you to say something like, well, it's good job. One of us is going to win a major. I hope Nico will win one day. Well, that's what you want to say. I want some Conor McGregor shit. You know what I mean? Like, give me some spice. Like, don't. Also, you're fucking Simple and Nico. You aren't fucking the nicest guys ever. Don't actually be yourself. Stop being a fucking fake sportsman. Because another part to me is, if you think of the old era, bro, as I was saying, it was the cultural impact era. Think of the rivalries you had. You had like VP against anyone. If you didn't know, by the way, I've asked them this in interviews. They even get it. VP never overtly ever said, we'll kick your ass after the game. But because they did look like a bunch of Polish bouncers, like, there was the implication, like, maybe they're like, maybe they'll fuck us up if they score. That was a real thing. Yeah. They definitely used for, like, rookie teams, I'm telling you right now. That's also why they were super hard to beat. They were, like, intimidating. Obviously, you had, the joke is, you know, now, they did, by the way, I'll give you another perfect example of people who just won't embrace WWE. Spoiler, I've made it clear. I got Zeus to say it on the fucking show. Twists will not play with a leash. They are not friends. They do not really hope each other does well, even though they all say that in every fucking interview, and yeah, they all have to tweet each other, I hope you have a great game. You're supposed to be Kobe and Shaq, you idiots. You should be like, fuck him, he will never win, I'm going to win now. I want that. Like, whereas back in the day, in Sweden, they weren't like, I hope the Swedish team... Nipper Fnatic, if they go out the tournament, they hope the other team gets banged up by Denmark or fucking Brazil. Of course you don't want them to win the tournament. You don't win. Why would you? And then you thought, by the way, Swedes against the French, there was a classic one right there, like I said, NIP very games, Fnatic versus LDLC. The joke is simple, actually, when he had the balls to trash talk against everyone, just everyone hated this fucker. Everyone's trying to get him kicked out of FPL. He wouldn't stop talking shit to everyone, would he? Like back then, he was Conor McGregor. Everyone wanted a piece of this motherfucker. It was red panty night all the time. So yeah, I do think that's one area where players could step it up, will you? Just have some fucking actual try, especially if you're JL, bro. You've already like made steps into being like the guy who banters. Don't pull back now. Embrace it. That's actually one thing you could really do for the scene, even if you're playing bad. You can still be entertaining.
Yeah, I mean, that's what caught me maybe most off guard. I think JL has like risen as this guy who likes to be a bit loose, you know, have a little fun. I've seen him do the like the middle finger, you know, all these jokes and fun. I thought that was good. But then when I see he refusing to shake Santara's hands because Santara shoots his body in game, then it's like, bro, then you should not even start to do that kind of stuff to begin with. Like,
pull a JW, give him a little fucking dig to the ribs. Give him a little elbow, little hockey ball.
Yeah, I mean, like, you have to give and take. You have to be able to give and take. And yeah, I don't know. I'm kind of lost of words for just that particular instance, to be honest. I think shooting the bodies in game, like, are we going towards Valorant or what? Like,
yeah.
Valorant, you're not even allowed to do it. You're getting fined, and it has been in CS for, I don't know how long, sure, but as long as I can remember, pretty much. And yeah, I think he's also showing kind of a weak mentality that obviously he gets affected by it. I mean, if I am any other top team right now, I'm going to shoot JL's body as much as I can, every chance I get. Like, he has kind of shown him to be vulnerable like that, and I just feel that's also a stupid move. I mean, just own it, I feel like.
And by the way, look, obviously this is completely empty, hollow words. I don't fucking do the events, so I'll probably never get even the chance. But all I'm saying is, Maui is actually a fucking pro. He's a professional. He was never going to diss Snacks to his face. Even fucking Kassad knew this isn't the moment when Hooksy's winning to like say something. Like, he's sort of got the edge on me right now, hasn't he? Spoiler, put me on a desk with a pro player that doesn't like me. I give fucking Shaq the business, and I can tell you, in real life, he wanted to kick my motherfucking ass after that. So, like, all I'm saying is, if you want some drama, you know where to come. You know the number, motherfucker. Right, okay. By the way, I do agree as well. That's one thing people always mistake is, because there isn't like, we don't sell loads of tickets, and no matter what people tell you on Reddit, mate, they're not really watching, like, so it's not chess, they're not watching, like, come on, you opened with the Queen's Gambit into a Polish formation. Like, no one's doing that, so we're here to be entertained, guys. Like, give us some actual fucking spice, do some WWE. By the way, you can even do that. I've even told JL this. Bro, if you actually want, we can do it like WWE. You can tell me, like, I'm going to do a fucking angle to you and I'll do something back, you know. As long as it's with a wink and a nod, it's fun. We can do that too. The fans would love it. They'd eat that shit up.
Yeah, 100%.
Right, Maui, what is your bad point?
Mine is just, I guess, you know, this maybe doesn't affect everybody to all too much, and it's more about just me having a harder job now in building up tournament narratives. Okay. It's just that, yeah, it's very self-serving in that. I just think that because the VRS cutoff is tomorrow and we're going to know who all the major invites are as of, I don't know, like 10 hours from now or something like that, or 12 hours from now, maybe. It means that we have this weird dead spot in Tier 1 where the events don't really have the same level of gravitas that they did earlier in the season. Like, for example, Cluj, Katowice even, really everything, ESL Pro League to an extent. Like, all of these events had implications on the Austin Majors invites, but now from April 7th until really the next cutoff for the next major, everything is going to have points and everything's going to have decay up to that point. So, you know, PGL Bucharest, big event in terms of prize money, big event because teams are going to have ranking, but it's almost kind of like in what was sort of carrying the season's impact is now just suddenly gone. And we're going to have this entire period from April to really the start of the major where it's like every tournament is cool. And I guess the, you know, the Grand Slam story is going to probably carry some of the IEM or ESL events for the time being. But in terms of the other ones, it's kind of like, yeah, these are important. These are the best teams playing. But are people saving strats now? Are people just waiting for the major? Like, you know, the teams, I think what it means to me is that the teams that don't have a trophy in their cabinet don't really, like, have something to fight. They have something to fight for. Right. Like, they want to get in under their belt before the major so they can prove it to themselves. But for some of the teams that have already proven it, like, even to an extent, Spirit and Mouse, I feel like they're in a position where they're just kind of like, yeah, they'll go to these events. Are they going to give it 100%? I would think it's a little bit less likely. Vitality at least is going to fight for the Grand Slam, but I'm just saying it's kind of bad right now that we're in sort of a dead spot in terms of narratives for until the major starts.
Okay.
I think that makes sense. I don't have like the solution for it, but obviously it's like you say, like now everyone has been fighting so hard, especially I would say like the lower, the ones that are about to make the cut pretty much. And now it's like you're in. Nothing else really matters because everyone wants those stickers, right? And yes, and get into the major and have a chance at the major. So it really does create somewhat of a dead space. And I think also from like a viewer's perspective, it's like there was so much more on the line when you knew that, okay, this match, if you lose this, you can actually miss out on the major, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And now instead you're going to think like, are they really giving it everything and all this? I think it's a bad spot all around, to be honest.
Put it this way, you know when people on HLTV, often fanboys, but they weren't trolling. Some people really meant they were like, they're just saving strats for the major. I obviously always used to go, you fucking idiot, that doesn't even exist. Like, but the joke is, it actually could in theory exist. I mean, I guess actually we did just reference the one strat ever saved, which was the bullshit boosts. That was the one thing ever saved by anyone. Aside from that, though, no one really did save anything, guys, because you had to test it, you had to know it's good. Also, you have to be good when the major comes. So the difference is, I'm with you, Maui. If you were like Vitality and you win like two more events and then there's like the last, you should go like 60% on the last one. You should just sort of like fucking course so people don't have that much to use. And then at the major, you should unleash everything, of course. That even makes sense. I'm with you as well. Like, it is tricky because the other problem is, it's a bit like what happened with the rankings because of the last PGL. If you're the teams that haven't had the big result yet, you should be playing like this is your world championship and going crazy, but then it's going to make you look better than you are as well. Like, you're going to look like, oh my God, they're actually as good as this team. Like, no, that other team's already won tournaments and they're going to be at the major itself. So I agree. It makes it harder to judge. You can't just look at a tournament and go, everyone there was like going 100%. Like, I guess that isn't a thing. True. Right. My bad point is going to be, it's actually referencing one of the old guys. It is going to be about Simple, because if you saw on his stream, he was doing one with this person. I don't know if it's pronounced Everlorn or Evil One, whatever that guy's got, some streamer guy. And basically, he did another Simple one where you give like a tiny bit of like info, like, oh, but then you keep it like vague so no one knows. So basically, he claims he does have some offers and obviously his contract's running out. So as you can imagine, as long as you're not G2 and the Saudis don't have infinite money, in theory, when the contract starts running out, actually it's cheaper and cheaper to do the buyout because obviously there's like less, they're going to lose you for free eventually. It's going to be like football. You go on a free transfer and you get nothing. So if you're Na'Vi in theory, if there's an offer Simple agrees to, like it's at least a decent enough team, you should do whatever it's worth at this point in time because he makes some money and also you stop paying his salary, which is probably fucking at this point a waste of money. He's just sat on the bench, isn't he? Or he's fucking having, I'd say, have a lemonade shandy and going on stream and doing questionable things anyway, with not even old school questionable things, which were hilarious. Yeah. Look up some of those clips, like your Freiburg clip back in the day. Straight fighting.
The Freiburg clip is too good. It's too
good for me to even reference. Just look up like Simple Freiburg back in the day. It's one of the most bonkers fucking stream clips of all time. I still can't, by the way, another one. So I also did tell Simple that, JW. I told, just like I understand this and have self-awareness, I did tell him, you better thank your lucky stars you played a Valve game, mate. Like, if you'd have said that shit in like a Riot game, your career would be done, mate. You'd have even been the GOAT. No one would know for you, you fucking idiot. You'd have been banned for life or something. So I do think, like, essentially, the bad point is that there's still uncertainty about when or even if Simple actually will return. Because he claims now he has it. Before, he had offers that, as far as I know, he just wouldn't have taken. Like, they weren't good enough. And he obviously still thought he could come to like a top team and be the best again. Now, he basically said there's like some offers, some of them are interesting. And like, you know, as the buyout goes down, maybe it'll happen. The problem is, though, notice, despite the fact that sounds positive, that is not a promise he's coming back. Like, technically, we don't ever know, does Simple ever properly play CS2? Because I'm sorry, I don't really count like a very brief standing in Falcons as like he was properly in CS2. Like, I'll tell you right now, there's a reason why no one really trash talked him when he came back. Like, people like Donk didn't go, hey, I guess he wasn't that good. Like, because everyone knew he wasn't properly playing the game. He needs to have like a few months. He needs to, he's done some face at grinding, but he needs to play a place. He needs to play official tournaments. He has to get good again, and then we can actually have a cool conversation. I also think, by the way, if you are people like the Monaces and the Donks, it's like Michael Jordan when he retired. You want to play against this guy. You don't just want to go, I wonder if I would have been. You don't want it just to be Maui making points. If he went back in time, he'd be better than him. You want to play him now and be better than him and be like, I got him at the end. That's actually cool for you. It's, by the way, I also think that's why I actually like when people like you keep playing JW and keep playing for extra years, because when someone's an up-and-coming player, it's kind of cool they get to battle against you and like get the crown and get the torch passed. I think that's important. I actually think it would be sad if Simple's career, who I think was the GOAT, ends on like, he sort of did like a mini shit comeback in CS2 and he wasn't that great. He was all right. And it was on a team that never won any matches, and then that's it. And then everyone just, I mean, by the way, first of all, people like Maui are then just going to go see him who was levels ahead or whatever. So it's going to be a fucking nightmare. I want the GOAT to actually go out on a semi-high. At least give me like at least 1 year of being like, I don't know, the 11th best player in the world. I'll accept that. There's my porn stars offer. Just give me that off. Give me the 11th best player for 1 year and I'll accept that you're done after that.
Yeah, no, I definitely want to see Simple again as well. I agree that I don't think he have given CS2 enough time that to be able to judge like if he's gonna be good or not. Sure, face it one is one thing, but you also need to get into like the team aspect of playing CS2. It is quite different, and but I don't know, maybe there's perhaps like a small fanboy in me, but I think if someone can do it, I feel like Simple can do it.
Of course.
Mainly because what he did in CSGO and the way he grinds and the way he put in the work in CSGO, like probably one of the hardest workers
ever.
Yeah,
absolutely.
So I'm really, I really think he can do it, but I think it's not going to be as easy as some people think. Like, just because he gets a team and gets out of that contract, he's going to be instantly good. I don't think that it's going to be a lot of work behind it.
No, by the way, as I did, I mean, I was half joking, obviously, on a hot take point made with some of those takes. That was for the fucking hot take show. The problem is, I'm with you. Like, people don't get this. Fans, because they think you're biased or they think you overrate someone, they always think you're a fanboy of every player. Like, I wasn't really, like, a mad fan of, like, MSL. I just thought he was a good in-game leader. He was, like, underrated or whatever. There's two people in CS that are still around that I actually will just fanboy over. And those are Simple as, like, a star and Carrigan as an IGL. Like, these guys will actually have to just not even be able to click them out before I'll ever give up the dream that like they could still do it. Look, they're back. Like bro, I'm not even joking. You guys are just lucky that like FaZe didn't somehow bullshit win that major at the end of last year. If they'd have won that, I would have just done some outrageous tweet like Carrigan is the GOAT, fuck Glaive. So I'd have done something like that. In that moment I would have been so euphoric and I'd have felt like all my fantasies were true. And I'm with you. Part of me just feels like that's also why I need that year, JW. I need to sort of know he wouldn't have been as good in CS2. As long as I have a proper year and I know, right, he gave it a proper try. He was in a real team. He went to the lands. By the way, you know, he hit some shots. And he was, but you know, Monacy was better or whatever. Then I wouldn't be haunted by it. But I also think it would really suck because since he chose not to play CS2, yeah, now he hasn't had like the big offers. But he could have had that. It feels like we and him got cheated in a way of what CS2 could have been. Because now we'll never know if he could have been sick like Nico was and Zebu was, etc. I think that's kind of a sad question to not have answered. Whereas like, yeah. Think about JW kept playing to the end. We know he's not good anymore. Whatever. Now, listen, we don't have to be haunted by that, Maui. We know he's just like 2.5 Swedish AWP. It's all good.
Yeah, IGL as well.
Oh, true. Okay, my bad. Okay.
Bragging IGL.
Well, here's the thing, though. He understands, Maui. Fairly at least bragging. He gets what I'm talking about. He gets you do it when you're washed. You don't do it when you've got anything else in the tank. Do you? Like, you need to do that to stay in the team. And also then, spoiler, just like being founder, that's the power move right there, JW. Founder and IGL and captain. They can't fucking kick me out. I run this shit. Exactly.
Yeah.
And I'm the IGL. It was your fault I died. What are you talking about?
Exactly.
Classic.
There's a life hack right there.
Absolutely. Right. Let's go. Well, first of all, actually, that was about bad things, but there are more good things in CS, just not a good section. Obviously, we are sponsored by this company that makes these wonderful t-shirts that we always talk about, Into the AM, aren't they? And if, as you might know, whenever we are sponsored by Into the AM, first of all, they make really good t-shirts. They have all the print ones. They have like classic, just basic color tees. Maui has a few. What color one you've got there?
I forgot we were doing this ad. Oh, I would have worn. I brought a bunch of the shirts because I've been working out.
Show us one.
I got one. I got one right here.
New design. I haven't seen this one. Oh, it's like
it's like space.
Oh, okay.
That's upside down right now.
Yeah, they've got loads and loads of print ones. By the way, they also have like bundles. You get like three print ones for like $60 or something. You get like three of the basic ones for like $50. Also, I will say I've washed these loads of times. They still hold all the color. The build quality is really nice. And at the moment, they don't have any sales going on, but they do have that thing where if you use our code on the screen, intothem.com/LFN, loads of you have done it before. Thank you. They're very good products. They've supported us for actually years at this point in time. And also, you always get like 10% off your order if you do that. And by the way, in the future, when they do have sales, it also stacks with it as well. So they're actually one of the coolest companies in terms given the savings in that sense. Also, we are going to do, we did one shirt before that was like a vague collaboration. We're actually going to do some LFN collaborations with this company since they've been such a good sponsor. And we have a channel on our Discord server, the Last Free Nation Discord. If you go there, there's a channel. It's called Into the AM Design Feedback Channel. And I think they put like sketches or like what it could look like. And then you can actually vote as a fan, like which one would you buy? Like, which one do you think looks good? And then you can have some input into which ones we end up with. So thank you to Into the AM. Use intothem.com/LFN. Get 10% off. Tell them we sent you and that you enjoy the show and that you actually do think Maui has good takes and belongs in the scene and isn't just a total fraud or whatever people say nowadays. I mean, who the fuck knows at this point in time? Who knows? I will say, by the way, on that topic, here's how you actually do know Maui. This will always be an entertainment industry. It isn't just about pure sports. I'm not even trolling. I posted this on Twitter so people might have seen this. Right, I recently went on Talking Counter and I myself didn't expect that to be like some big pop-off episode, mate. I even joked on the episode, like, do you just only invite me when Sponge is not available and then Moses is like, fuck, I need someone for tomorrow. Like, Thorin's always at home. I always joke like that, right? But when I had a look, mate, it's like the fifth highest fucking viewed episode. Like, there's only people like Simpler Nico's episodes, like More Than Man. Like, I'm above like all major winners and fucking people in Vitality and shit. Like, that is ridiculous. Yeah, yeah. Do you know how stupid that is? If you don't know, the episode of this show that had the biggest viewership wasn't Kenny S, fucking Snappy, like Apex. It was fucking Richard Lewis. Again, you all go, you're all irrelevant boomers, mate. We're too relevant. You know, you do realize we should be irrelevant. We are like 40-year-old fucking UK boomers who were never, ever pro. In theory, we don't even know that much about the game. We're just pundits just doing our talking. Well, it's a game of two halves, isn't it? The second half, they better come back. And they got... Well, why are our episodes? Because here's the thing. Even if you hate us, you fucking love to hate us, though, don't you? You have to watch, don't you? You have to know what stupid things Soren says that then he can go, you know, it's nothing about the game. But wait a minute, what did he say next? Yeah, he knows nothing about that, too. Oh, fucking money. He's wrong again. Like, yeah, exactly. The difference is, you'd rather hear me say stuff that's wrong than apparently, like, Flames say stuff that's right. Like, fucking hell. I'd watch his episode. Come on, give me a break.
I know. I've had some of the most ego-stroking moments lately, especially when we're talking about Zywoo or Vitality, because they pin me with you, where like you've said a lot of stuff about Zywoo in like late stages in tournaments, sure, and stuff like that, and I went back and I was like, did I even say any of this stuff? Because they always just say that I'm like, I am fostering this like Zywoo choker narrative, and I looked, I had one tweet about when he played badly versus Stewie in map 3 at Dallas, right, and that's it. That's true. Like all I've done for 4 years. Okay. I went back and tried even finding podcasts where it's like, when did I talk about him so badly or whatever? And so they're putting like words into my mouth that you've said, which always happens between us.
Yeah, of course.
And then also they say like, when Maui's on desk, I mute, but then I go through their history and they've said things I've said on a desk. It's just obviously impossible. Yeah. It's obviously, how am I mute? Are you using closed captioning or something?
I know.
How is this possible?
By the way, the joke of that as well, Maui, is if to show that they're always going to be like making shit up. The joke is, even I haven't said the things they think I have about Zywoo. By the way, I have never ever said this sentence out loud. Zywoo is bad in playoffs and chokes all the elimination game. I've never ever said that sentence in my entire life. What happened was, the odd time he would underperform, and by the way, it was very rarely that he choked. It was more like he didn't carry the game. The very rare times that did happen, and obviously it has happened in history, I would point it out. That's why when KRL did that thing where he just showed the stats like Maniac calculated or whatever, by the way, probably picked the wrong person to align yourself with there, KRL, but you did that, not me. Said the person who had a talk show with him and just got quietly deleted. Don't worry about that. Listen, I'm talking about you now, not me. Don't make this about me. So I will say, when you ran the stats, like, look, in playoffs, she's sick. Yeah, I don't know if you know this. That's not a hot take. Like, I am fully aware Z was really cracked out in CS2. You know, like, okay.
Wait, you know, on the sidebar of the left side of HLTV, you can just click playoff filter.
Yeah. By the way, it's good that exists now as well. Yeah, now we actually have that too, which is awesome. Yeah, I agree.
That just exists.
This is also where people don't get this, Maui. I have only ever critiqued Ziwu in the context of, is he the GOAT or is he better than Prime Simple? Well, the problem there is you're going against the biggest bar of all time and the ultimate playoff. Yeah. Like, if you don't know, guys, even at Majors, this guy came like fourth, he'd still just fucking have impossible stats that were like mind-blowing. It was almost never his fault. The problem Ziwu always had was this, Maui. His stats would still be like, I don't know, the fifth best player in the whole world in one of these playoffs. It's just that sometimes in the group stage it was even better, which is not the same as he sucks in the playoffs. Like, guys, when you make a straw man like that, it makes me think you just didn't have a point. If the point you need to argue against is the other person has to say Ziwu sucks at CS so you can be right, I think you don't have many points, do you? Fucking hell, what do you need next? Like, and you know what the biggest joke of all is? And you'll even know this, Maui. They hold us to this crazy standard. And then they, unironically, quite literally will turn around and go, Nico, more like Choco, he sucks. And you're like,
I know.
Nico,
I know.
Like, again, mate, you can think he's like the fifth best player of all time. He's pretty good at CS. You know what I mean? Like, he doesn't suck. Even if he's had a bad game at a major, he's pretty fucking good at CS. Come on. Come on, bro.
Yeah, just our incredibly self-indulgent sidebar for the episode.
Yeah, don't worry about that. It's all good.
It's all good. Just have to do it.
And the best part is, now all the comments can be like, no, we should stop talking about themselves in the episode. Shut up and talk about CS. But also then, don't talk about CS, because you know nothing about that too. Apparently we can't talk about what we know ourselves, and what we like and love and are obsessed with. And also, that's also one thing I did teach Maui as well. What I had to teach him was this. In theory, Jed, you should know this yourself, JW. It's actually a bummer when you wake up and all loads of people are hating on you and everything you say, they try to... But one thing you realise eventually is, it is actually... There's a famous quote by Oscar Wilde, the famous like Irish playwright, right? Where he said, the only thing worse than being talked about is not being talked about. It's way worse to be the person that's like really good at the game and people don't even pay you any attention. Like, you're just invisible. You're just off here doing nothing. Like, that is actually worse. In a bad way, you actually do want fanboys to be obsessed with you and hate on you and have some angle. Again, that's part of the entertainment industry. It makes people watch. It's like wrestling. They want to boo this person.
Yeah, I mean, I still live on, and I think every Twitch chat with a JW pregnancy check HLTV or some shit. Okay. I mean, obviously, people are still spamming it yet to this day. I see it every top tournament I watch. So
now, you were the guy they invented that Apple emoji for. Okay, right, I see, right.
That's what they talk about.
Right, anyway.
When Zywoo's done playing, they will still keep spamming JW.
Oh, of course.
JW pregnant.
Of course.
Yeah,
that's
sure,
the cultural
sure.
impact, exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
And by the way, that this is even a meta level they haven't even got to yet, Maui. By saying Ziwu has no cultural impact and the whole thing about the air quality, you actually gave him cultural impact. That meme itself has cultural impact. So in a way, Maui's on like some inception, like two layers up, and you fuckers are just stuck on level one. Like, you don't even get what's going on in this game. Understand that.
Yeah, though. I know.
Understand that.
It's just playing into my hands. It's really...
Because, by the way, don't worry, by the way, fans will always do that. Like, you've probably seen this yourself, mate. You know this. Even before I ever even had any, like, Twitter booth with JL, I always used to say that she's, like, a big game player. People used to, every game he ever carried, at me and be like, see, you said he was shit. It's like, I think he's a shithead. I've never said he's shit at CS. The joke is, he is now shit at CS. But that's actually just fucking lucky for me, I guess. So before that, he was actually really good for that first year or so when he was in Na'Vi. I think he was actually fucking cooking. It's a fair play. You should get back in the kitchen. See, that's the only person in CS you're allowed to say that about, Maui. Or people who play the B-site on Mirage. Whatever. Right, anyway, enough of that. Right, let's go on. So now we will go to the ugly portion. Listen, I didn't set this up. It was the order. JL, what's ugly in CS? JW, sorry. I said JL there. I had JL in the mix.
Yeah, wait.
Fine.
He is
fine.
Also ugly, though, to be fair. So keep going.
I'm not sure exactly how to I'm just going to start talking about it, and you're going to get the point.
Yeah,
but it's going to be more about Exist, but it's not really about Exist. It's more about the system. So I think Exist the other day here, he went out and complaining at teams that was playing the Yala LAN qualifier to gain the Valve ranking points for the major ranking update, despite not being able to go to the LAN.
Wasn't the stat something like five of the top six teams like don't even plan to go?
Five of the six teams that qualified are not planning to go. Because they needed to play these, and they made the points from these matches so that they made a major qualifier. And I think he even stated, like, quote-unquote, like that they were ruining chances for many teams that actually wanted to go to the LAN, which I can agree with. But I also think, like, Exist and NIP, they abuse the rules by having Jax in the lineup.
True.
And stealing invites from other Tier 2 teams to, like, via the wildcard thing. So it's just easiest to bring up the point by mentioning the existing, but I think it's more about the system itself, I guess, it is built like that. I didn't want to go too in-depth on Maui's when he brought out his bad point, because I think this is kind of similar. I mean, yeah, it's just a bad system, kind of. It comes with good stuff, like the open lands and stuff like that. But I think the system needs to be way better than this.
I'll also just say there, that's exactly what we were talking about in that other point. He still had to get a shot in at fucking Exist, who he's even agreeing with. He had to get a shot in at the old NI people. They're abusing. They abuse shit too. They do boosts as well. They're boosting Jacks or whatever. Come on, Maui, what do you think?
It's just, I mean, one of the complicated aspects of we're happy that these smaller lands are gaining gravity because they have VRS implications, but then also it's making this online qualifier have VRS implications too, which should be, it's weird that a qualifier for a specific event actually has a meta reason to play in it, which is to qualify for a different tournament. Like, you know, Snappy was mad before that to get into the Blast finals, you would play a qualifier to get into a qualifier to get into a qualifier. But now it's like you're actually playing a qualifier for a tournament to qualify for a different tournament. Like, it just feels like all of this is really kind of, what do I even say, like Kafka-esque? I don't know. Yeah, it's very just the way you have to go through a system to try to participate in another system, that's got to be some kind of flaw. Like, I also will say that I feel like I with this, because I saw the how it was Exist saying it or Notes article about it, just like, you know, five of the six teams aren't going. I don't know, are they just passing it down to the other teams in the qualifier? I guess I mean I have to assume that's the case. So I would just hope that the implications are that, oh, the teams that played at it and any of them that got any wins at all are just going to take the spaces of the teams that bow out. I thought that's how these go. They get handed down. So hopefully it doesn't lead to nobody getting it, at least.
Yeah, I think I also kind of want to add that I think it's also really bad that there is no open qualifier, like no open chance to get to the major. I still think that feels like bad to me. I think there's so many stories through the history where like these open qualifiers have made a lot of impact for a lot of players, a lot of teams and whatnot. I think surely there's a way to find a solution where we can still have this system, but also implement like an open qualifier system. Because I think those storylines, it's really important. And I also think like the chances are really, really important.
Yeah, I always just say on that one, it doesn't have to be one way or the other. Before, everyone had to qualify from the ladder. We could just have like one spot, and it could just be like the last chance qualifier type thing. Yeah. They had that in Dota itself. Like, why not just have like one spot and make that like the cool story of the team that makes it? I'm fine with that, yeah. I'm with you. I agree, though. Like Maui's point, this actually even makes it awkward for like desk type things, because how do you even explain how a team got to this tournament? Like, oh yeah, what happened is they placed top four in a qualifier to another tournament. By the way, TOs usually don't even want you to mention other tournaments. And then that qualified them here because, and again, one of the problems we have right now is like no one's clicking that fucking GitHub link like and figuring out how that formula works. Like, no one can explain how anyone got the points. Like, it's why the joke was, it literally was like 3 months before anyone figured out that it wasn't even a bug that the Imperial female team made it, because it was when I actually clicked on it and read the rules, and it said in the rules you were allowed to gender segregate. So it wasn't like they oversight added the ESL impact. They actually wanted that added. They considered adding ESL impact the same as having like a Chinese only tournament or something. So that was even intentional. So yeah, it's going to completely throw off how you tell the narrative of how you got there. And I actually agree with Exist's point as well, because here's a point people won't think about, right? When you say like that, Maui, because it's the obvious thing you do after the tournament when someone pulls out, if you say afterwards, right, well, what we'll do is, because the top five or whatever, or five of the top six didn't want to go, right? Okay, problem solved. Number 7, 8, 9, 10, they all get to go, right? That doesn't actually make sense, because what if, for example, I'm actually the third best team there, but I played the top two teams early in the qualifier? Like, that means I wouldn't be like seventh at that point. I wouldn't get that far in the tournament. It's the same reason why when we used to have open qualifiers for the major online, cheaters ruined the qualifiers, because you can't ever replay the whole bracket. So yeah, you can disqualify them, but if they beat like an actual good semi-pro team, that semi-pro team will never get to the point where they could have then qualified, and they won't be the next in line because the bracket didn't work out that way. So it's also just not as simple a fix as people realize. Like, you actually should almost have a system where, again, this is where Valve would have to change it, because it's their incentives that make people get around the rules and do the loophole bugs. They'd have to make a rule which was like, if you qualify, you have to attend or something, or you get or the obvious angle, by the way, would be you lose the VRS points if you don't go to the LAN. That would be an angle there too, because I also think it also, by the way, it sucks if you yell a compass. You just played a whole qualifier, people are watching the qualifier, oh great, I'm going to see that team at the LAN. Like, you're not. They're not going. Like, what is that? And it makes their LAN look stupid. I could tell you, as someone who did Flashpoint, when we did Flashpoint season one, Big Clan qualified and then didn't come, and they went and played a Pro League. That made us look stupid. Because, like, I mean, the joke is we actually did get the Havu team, we ended up being pretty good, but that makes our tournament look shit, that they qualify and then go, actually, we'd rather just go somewhere else. Like, that's just a bad look for everyone. Like, what sort of sport is that? I think that just makes everyone look unprofessional.
Yeah, I agree. And as you said, I think, Sure. Let's say now they drop out and it just goes passed down. But let's say if they're not planning to go anyways, then there's 5 invites that will go to the 5 lower teams, which will give other teams a chance for a tournament and whatnot. So I think it's just that's why I wanted to, like, it's the system itself that I feel is ugly and not necessarily exist in this case. No. Even though I always like to talk about old Nip boys. I think it's a step in the wrong direction. And also, play these to qualify for the major. And then, as you said, like, pretty much shit on that tournament organizer. It's bad taste all around, I feel like.
Maui, what is your ugly point?
Yeah, my ugly point here is that, what was it actually? We see that this was something I brought up on another show before, and it was kind of like, I was going to make sure. Let's see. It was kind of like, okay. So obviously, some of the top teams are not here at PGL Bucharest, which I am in attendance of right now. And the disclaimer, I guess, is obviously I'm working the event. And the ugly point I have is that, you know, when some of the teams, the top 4 teams, I'd say, like Vitality, Spirit, Na'Vi, G2, Liquid, Furia, in the past didn't attend Cluj, there was kind of a swirling rumor that the reason they didn't do it is because, oh, there's no club incentive. So if you're not going to this event, it's because their orgs decided that, because there's no club incentive, they're not going to go because all that there is prize money for the players. And, you know, Spirit, Vitality, etc., Liquid, they wanted to actually just play the tournaments that have club incentive. Well, now there's club incentive for PGL Bucharest, and it's huge. Like, it's a huge amount of money for... They basically just split their $1.25 million prize pool in half, made it that even the bottom team is guaranteed club money, which, by the way, is not the case at certain ESL events. Like, ESL events, the last place team doesn't even get club share at all.
Right.
So even just by attending this, you get $6,250 bare minimum, like, which would have normally been, I think, a 12.5K player prize money thing. But they just split absolutely everything, with first place getting $200,000 in prize money for the players. And or I guess it would be divvied by the players and the org based off of their contracts. But then 200K is just flat out for the club share. And so the ugly point here is that even though they decided to add this and kind of bend the knee to what seemed like had to happen for the top teams to attend the event, they still didn't go. So this is just kind of revealing that it seems more than likely that there is some kind of deal that's going on with the top organizations in Vitality, Spirit, Na'Vi, and who else would be in this? Well, Liquid. I actually, there was a couple.
I mean,
more.
Liquid went now, but the people fought these orgs before.
Yeah, yeah. Well, now the ones that didn't go for a second time, now you have to think, okay, like, this is not a hard event to fly to if you're a European team. True. Like, it's a studio event with a huge ass prize pool in Europe, so it doesn't really make a lot of sense to not go to it. So all I'm really saying here is that This is probably, I don't know when it's going to happen. I don't know if and this is speculation. Also a disclaimer, full speculation.
Yeah, yeah.
It feels like there's some kind of backdoor deal that's going on between some of the TOs and that keeps PGL out of the running of getting some of the top elite teams from going to their tournaments.
Yeah, I think that kind of from like an outside perspective, it feels like that has to be what it is, right? First, it was like the easy excuse that there's no club incentive, there's not this, not that, and then when there is, you're still not going. Like from outside perspective, it feels like obvious. It has to be some kind of thing like that. And yeah, I think it's not good overall. I mean, that's basically what Valve wants to remove, right?
Yes.
These franchise things. That's exactly what they want to counter. So I think it's not a good look, and potentially could maybe bite them later on.
I will say on this particular topic, I'll quickly explain in case people forget this info, because obviously some people aren't super nerds. What used to happen basically at the beginning of the year was, if you ever looked on like Liquipedia, because it just shows the prize money at the time, it would show an event like Melbourne that's coming up only had like, you know, like something like 350,000 prize purse or something crazy. You would think, what? But then it wasn't. If you ever looked up how much ESL said it was, they listed the event as like a million or something. But the point was, like 700K was just going to go to the org, not the players in prize money. So as a result, meanwhile, PGL's was just like, it's all just prize money, and then it's up to you to decide the org. But that, unfortunately, because of the way contracts are, that typically just meant the players just got all the prize money. So one of the reasons why, this is why it's complicated, I used to sound like I thought that was fine, is because if it was purely just that the team wants some of the money and they need the money to run the team since you lose millions of dollars, I'm fine with that. My problem is, basically, now that PGL has changed it to something quite similar to ESL's, and as Maui says, they've even added an extra incentive, which is even if you come last place, you get something. So actually, if you're the org, you should be even more wanting your team to go, especially if you're not like the number, like if you were Liquid, even if you come last place, you'd get something. So you're extra incentivized. What it now shows is what, this is why I imagine people like Richard were annoyed. I don't exactly know what he said, but I imagine this is why he had a negative perspective, is because he probably knew about this behind the scenes, and he knew, oh, it's not just that. It's also that, like, essentially, as well as the club reward, they're maybe just getting paid by ESL or the other people to not attend. It's almost like they're not just paying for you to attend their event, they're also paying like, don't attend my rival's event, that way my event always looks sick and then theirs looks like it's DreamHack Open, and then I'm running fucking Cologne is the analogy, you know, like my event, their event can never be as good no matter how much prize money they put. I would say that is obviously one, not what Valve wants. In fact, that's why this is actually a good power play by PGL, because it somewhat exposes, because even if you say like, well, what about, well, Liquid was saying out, yeah, Liquid also has had some really bad results, they almost have to come to this one, but you notice that the ones who don't have to, sort of the teams that are already going to be at the major, at the best teams, they aren't going, and that also then makes it look like you're not just not going, you're playing into the idea that this event just doesn't get to have the best teams, which will kill the rep of the event. So I do think that's a negative. I mean, to make a negative for me as a viewer, I also think, by the way, like you saw with people like Falcons, it means you don't even get credit if you make the final. If you make that last final, everyone goes, yeah it's just because no fucking good team. Same as Astralis. Remember, Falcons and Astralis came second and third, and no one gave them any fucking credit at that event. They were like, who cares, you got smashed at the next event, so you were frauds. Or so it also even ruins the teams that do benefit from going to this event on some level. It doesn't give them the proper status, whereas if all the teams had gone to that event and then Falcons had made the final, their entire narrative would have changed. Like, it'd be a totally different story. So I'm with you on that one. Like, at least that actually does expose it. If that is true, by the way, I hope Valve does do something about it and actually like sorts it out, because if that's what you're saying can't happen in the scene, it can't just happen secretly instead of publicly. Like, it's having the same effect, it's making teams not attend the event. And then lastly, just as a selfish viewer, it's not every event has to have the top teams, but I do want the events that are good with proper prize money and proper events and proper broadcasts and broadcast talent as well. Like, I don't want people like Tech Girl to get hired and not get to do work with the best teams. I want her to be able to talk about Vitality and other quads like that. So I do want, as a selfish viewer, I want all the best teams at the tournament. I like it back in the 10 years ago where every other tournament would have the top 8 teams in the world then. You knew it was going to be fucking sick. Yeah. Okay. Right.
Yeah.
Let's go on. I have for mine... This time, I'm just the pleb this time. I'm just going with a lot of really obvious topics for this one, boys. So I've put it into ugly, which is, the ugly thing is G2's future without Monacy. Because the story now goes, It actually turns up with them. What I heard, look, it's not that what I heard wasn't the case. Maybe it's changed. I definitely heard it from a very reliable source. They told me they didn't think Morrissey and Nico would ever play again together. I will say, by the way, him joining Falcons doesn't mean they're best friends. It means they both like money. But I'll just put that out there. Or don't like G2. You pick which it is. So it doesn't always have to be either or, guys. Anyway, I've already just essentially made it so I can't lose on that one, Maui, because even if he joins, like, he should say that for money. Like, I've secretly built in a trap there that they can never get me on that one. But what I'll say is this. The reason it's ugly, not bad or good, because look, in theory, it might be good for Falcons, might be bad for G2. The reason it's ugly is this. The one thing G2's going to get is they're going to get a whole load of money. Apparently, they're going to get millions of dollars. The problem is, if you look at the history of G2, they don't really sign players of the level of current Morrissey. Like, actually, Nico is the one blockbuster move I think they've ever made. That when he signed, like, in the COVID era, that was the one time they've ever signed an actual, like, top. Even when they got Morrissey, it was like Jambo from Fnatic.
He's from the Academy team.
No one even knew if that would be good. He could have ended up like an NFL bust where you're the number one seed and you don't make it in the pros, you know. So the problem is, they can't replace him. In the same way as they couldn't replace Nico and Malbs, There isn't, bearing in mind, Ziwu was not joining your team, that despite what the fucking spirit guy coped with when he already knew we couldn't get Morrissey, there isn't another player that can walk into and play Morrissey's spot with the AWP. Like, you are going to be a worse team. And quite frankly, if you look at where they're at as an org, they've got all these newer players, they've got Snacks there. I told you, there's even a rumour maybe Hunter takes over as Agile. I think they are going to be in such a messy, confusing place as a team after this major. I mean, even apparently at this major, there's another thing, they're going to lose him before the major. Like, their org is going to be all over the place. Like, I actually feel really bad now, by the way, for people like Malbs. Like, mate, you're an even heavy god. Like, you thought you were going to be in, like, one of the absolute best teams in the world and grow your career. You might be in, like, the 10th best team after this, or like the 15th best team. Like, I think G2's in a really tough spot. Like, their team was Nico and then Morrissey. Those were the stars. They carried it. Like, Malbs hasn't had enough time in his career to be that sort of player, and he isn't that good yet. So that's why I put it as ugly. Specifically on G2, I just think they're going to be in, like, almost an impossible position. I don't know how they... I don't even know what move... I'm not even saying to just... I don't know what move they can make that fixes this. What do you think about this story, JW?
Yeah, I think it's... once again, I'm going to go back a little bit and compare it, I think, a bit to Fnatic as well. I think it puts them in a rough spot in the sense that what is going to bring players wanting to go there? I mean, back in the day, like a couple of years back or whatever, you could go for Nico and Monis, right? Of course you want to join that team. But now, sure, it's impossible to even find someone like Monis, for example. But then again, you also need to get that player to be wanting to join your org and whatnot. Yeah. And that's also a tricky thing to solve. Yeah, I really don't see the solution, to be honest. And I'm looking forward to see what they're going to do. But I feel like I haven't seen any, like, really, really good moves from G2 since perhaps Carlos used to be involved. Like, I think he was involved in both Nico and Monesi.
Yes, as far as I know.
So yeah, I think that they are in a really, really tough spot, and I don't envy them for being in that position. But I'm looking forward to see what they are gonna manage to bring up.
Well, Maui, we're gonna end the show on you hating on G2. So go for it, mate. It's your specialty.
Yeah. Well, my take is this. This is just gonna further expose everybody at G2 who's currently there, because when Snacks won tournaments last year, the Blast Fall Finals, the Blast World Finals, he had Nico and Monesi. Like, winning with two of the best five players in the world, like, you could let Sean Gares, the streamer, today captain that roster, and they would probably have won the same tournaments. Like,
take ruined, but okay, all good.
Yeah, I don't put it past people that were, you know, washed IGLs. Like, you know, all the respect to Sean.
Yeah, of course.
Back in the day. But I'm just saying, like, anyone with any mind for Counter-Strike, now or past, like, that would have been fine to make that roster competent. Like, you could have put anybody in that seat, is what I'm saying. But now, it's great, because actually, in a way, like, you know, I've come around in some ways to Taz. I've come around in some ways to Snacks. I'm not saying he's a good IGL. I'm still not giving him that. He's not
better
a good
than Twist,
IGL,
still,
but he's, but he's a passable IGL in some regards. He's a passable IGL. Okay. And if they want to show that there's any value to them being on this roster, like, now this is the best time you could possibly prove it, because you've got a Malbs who showed he could be a top 20 player in the world last year, as he was one. And then you have a heavy god who was one of the most hotly talked about prospects as an anchor lurker player, period. You have Hunter, who's still a reliable veteran presence, maybe not as reliable in the fragging department, but he obviously helps out a lot in terms of vocally leading. And then you're going to probably take a less experienced AWPer. And if you can do anything, if you can get to playoffs, like my entire tone changes drastically when you have an underpowered lineup and you're making them look better than the sum of their parts, because I'll be realistic about it. I'm not going to be when you have Nico and Monacy, who will win 1v3s, 2v5s as a duo, I'm going to give you a little bit less credit as an IGL. So now is a great time to show everybody that warm-up period that you had, that grace period where you were going to get bailed out by people like Monacy and Nico. Well, now you can see it show the lessons you learned then with a less experienced lineup and finally earn that credit, because I'm not just going to give that to somebody. Even if they win a tournament, I'm not going to just give them all the plaudits in the world and say you're an elite IGL or anything like that just because of a trophy next to your name on HLTV's like little scroll bar. Like I need to see that you can make pieces. That's why I praise Shuhei for the Gamer Legion run in Paris. Like he took practically not nobodies, but guys that had only really tier 2, tier 1.5 experience and got them to a major grand finals. Like that showed me the value of Shuhei. It showed me the value of Ashe. They've since replicated that kind of ability and shown that's not a fluke. So I want to see if Snax and Taz can do that with it. Finally, not even an underpowered lineup, a lineup that almost is just like average firepower for a top 10 team. So great opportunity for G2 to prove themselves. And I also know that the Twitter users have been just going rabid at Pekka. Like Pekka has been that has drawn so much ire as the general manager of G2 because everybody's like, he let Nico go, he let Monacy go. I know. I feel like the only thing that I really was down on Pekka for was the Snax pickup. Like that to me was easily the worst move that he ever went with. Everything else, I'm actually kind of okay with it. Like I think the Mobs move was actually pretty good. I think the Heavy God one, thinking that Mobs is going to switch roles, is actually pretty good. I want to see what he does with this, and I'm not going to throw all the blame on him. In all honesty, because I don't know what kind of funds he's working with. I don't know what kind of resources he has to make moves. Like I think G2 fans expect championships, but I don't know if they actually have championship level resources.
Okay. I will say, as an example, this is why I was actually very sad that Hooksy sat out and at this point might never play as a CS IGL again. I, again, only hated on him because he had an unbelievable G2 roster at the time and didn't do shit at the majors. Like, I always thought if he'd have gone to, I actually heard Fnatic even gave him off and he didn't want to do it. Like, if he'd have gone to a smaller team like a Fnatic with, like, way like worse players and he'd have done anything, then I'd have won, seen it was him, and two, I would have given him credit. I'd have been like, by the way, the more fair one than Fnatic was. I just thought Astralis should have given him a shot. Like, they actually had some good players, people he'd worked with. Like, that would have been a chance to show your skills. The problem if your Snax is, yeah, he did win those blasts, but then he didn't do shit at the major. Like, what do you want? What do you want me to say? Like, it's people like Malbs and Nico shooting everyone in the head. Like, I'd have to give you too much credit, but if it's players we don't know or lesser players, and you overfarm with you, Maui, I think that's also just the fairest way to then give them their chance to prove themselves. I think we'll end it there.
I agree with Hooks. I just wanted to finish up on Hooks. I think it's really weird that he did not end up in a team actually after like the shuffles and all that. I really think Hooksy should get a chance.
He was. I think they were offering a trade. I'm like 90% sure this happened. That of course these rumblings are always kind of weird with contracts and everything. But like when G2 got Snax, there was an opportunity for Hooksy to.
I believe they said it was yes.
Gamer Legion, yeah, and then he just turned that down. Yeah. Thought it was above that, and now he just doesn't have any team at all. The one thing I wanted to ask JW though before we end this, because obviously Brolin's been a hot topic. You played with him before as he was a budding star. Was there any semblance of him becoming an in-game leader? I know it's like 5 years ago or whatever it was, but like
to be honest, I like people ask me a couple of times. I would say that I'm not really surprised. I am impressed, but I'm not necessarily surprised because like when I scouted him, I don't remember exactly when I was 15 or 16. Like the guy was living in demos. He was watching so much CS, and he was so much, like, at an early age, he was so much about the details. Like, he could sit, like, an extra 2-3 hours just to find, like, a little bit better flash or a little bit better smoke. Like, he was so much into the details. I never thought he would do it, like, in an international lineup, and especially not, like, this early, I think, in his career. That I'm a bit... surprised about. But yeah, I think thinking back of how he's as a how he's approaching things, it makes total sense. What I don't see, that could have developed a lot during these years, but what I don't see is that he's not like a captain type of person. He's more like shy, laid back, more like that kind of guy, not like a captain style. So that's my only concern, if you can say that. But I think it makes total sense the way I know him as a guy viewing CS, pretty much.